Cook County Commissioner Richard Boykin, French electronic musician Jean-Michel Jarre, and we reload this week's news with Lee Bay and Carol Felsenthal. And now, here's your host, a man who loves his rain sideways, Justin Kaufman.
There's just something great about sideways rain, right? Just really, especially like mid to late May, sideways rain. You thought sideways rain was just for October. You were wrong. It was fun watching the Cubs game today and seeing the sideways rain hitting Mike Montgomery in the face when he walked everybody. Walked like nine guys.
The other night I was taking the train home, and it was that night where we had that very stormy night. Yeah. And whenever from like Belmont to Wilson, whenever the doors opened, rain came. I was like getting wet on sitting on the train. Rain came in the train when the doors opened.
This morning, I got pelted with sideways rain, like where it was face level, coming straight at you, like
miserable,
punched right in the face. Like I was a drunk bro, and you were, and the rain was a security. The rain was a drunk bro, and I was a security guard asking them to move. Hey, what's up, everybody? It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We got a great show lined up tonight. Ride shotgun with you as you get out of town, perhaps, or hopefully get yourself home. I know the traffic situation was pretty bad this afternoon. I think it continues to be bad. So take a deep breath, and we'll ride shotgun with you tonight. We got some great segments to try and keep your mind off the traffic. And if you're at home, great. Awesome. Have a cold one on us. Not on us, but for us. That would be great if you go into the bar right now and be like, hey, Justin from GN said I could have a Coors Light. I'm like, ah, oh, man, what did I do? Tonight, Cook County Commissioner Richard Boykin's going to join us. Lee Bay, Carol Felsenthal will reload this week's news. We'll talk with electronic musician Jean-Michel Jarre, the father of EDM. And also tonight, and I didn't even bring this up with Roe, tonight, the return of Steve Gadlin, the frying pan tonight. He's got a brand new invention, and guess what? We're going to critique it. That's coming up, 10 o'clock tonight. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier, Roger Badish. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break here, get on time so we can do the carryout. Stay with us. This is The Download here on 720 WGN. I am Justin Kaufman. We got a huge show lined up. Before we do that, let's go to the carryout. Here are today's top stories. Nothing like finishing off the week with a bunch of rapid-fire bombshell stories that add more fuel to the fire to remove the President of the United States. Hey, it's a Friday afternoon. Nobody will notice. A new report says that President Trump told the Russians in his closed-door meeting last week that he fired the, quote, nut job, James Comey, the former FBI director, to relieve pressure on the investigation over his campaign's ties to Russia. Wow. Is that proof of obstruction of justice? And if so, do we care? I'm asking, do we care? I'm not sure we care. The White House doesn't dispute it, saying everything's cool, man. We're cool. But I mean, what else does Trump have to do for it to be proven that he's trying to obstruct or worse, hide something? Grab for an investigator's gun? Would that be, that's going to be the moment? Even if he did that, we'd be like, he wasn't grabbing for the gun, if you know what I mean. We've already been there. That would be fine. We've already decided that's fine, whatever he's grabbing. I'm not for an impeachment of the president, just to be clear, but this is getting kind of ridiculous. I like my DC news when it's about what bill has enough votes or which Democrat senator is rolling on the Senate floor to disrupt proceedings. This stuff? Nah. Unless Trump has relations with a White House intern, then, oh my God, we need to know about it. That's the only scandal I want to know about. This Russia stuff, move on. Let's go. What's going on with healthcare? We even doing that anymore? Are we done with that? I guess we're done with that. Illinois is still on track to create a Obama Day. It wouldn't be the kind of holiday that you would get off work, but in honor of Obama, it's a day that you can change the rules of your house so that you don't have to listen to anybody else. That and taking long pauses toward the ends of your sentences. You don't have to. do the dishes. Although I would worry that there's a minute. I would worry that the minute there's an Obama day, Republicans would work to their last dying day to repeal it, change it from Obama day to general, generic politician day. Everything is like just a little bit different. Democrat gubernatorial candidate J.B. Pritzker deposited $1 million into a black-owned Chicago bank to show support not only for the bank, but for the African-American business. When asked about it, Pritzker was like, listen, I pulled up a couch cushion. I was looking for the remote, and I just had, there was like $1 million in there just laying around. So I said, why not put it in that bank? Rauner did the same thing when he ran back in 2014, although his million was from under the seats of his car, not the couch. So a little bit different. Maybe CPS could go to that bank because it's being reported that they're going to borrow $389 million to get through the remainder of the school year. There you go. That's the hope and change we were waiting for. Who needs reforms or new ways to look at the challenges we face when you can do what you've been doing for the last gazillion years? $389 million is probably the same amount as the monthly interest payment on all the money we've already borrowed. So what's the difference, right? Just one more payment. And then nothing? Nothing from Springfield? That whole showdown we've been talking about for months, that's over? I wish Rom was around when I was learning about finances in school, or I wish he was my dad. Hey, if you can't afford something, son, borrow money and just hope that the relationships you build with the banks will get you on the transport when the city's finances collapse and there's mass rioting. Good talk, son. Now go get me a beer from the fridge. Not domestic. Get me the expensive kind. Thanks, Dad Rom. Researchers in Antarctica are blaming global warming for a new trend. As the ice caps melt away, Antarctica is turning green. What? Green? That's good, right? Right? I mean, green means more oxygen, recycling, Earth Day. What else do you want from us? Oh, I see. Green means the planet's melting right in front of our eyes. Got it. Okay. Sorry. Got confused with what's good. Green. Got it. Carry on. Nothing to see here. In weather, what did we have to do to deserve this? I mean, what was it all the talk of the male romper, the bromper, that Mother Nature's like, that's it. I'm taking back your May weather, and I'm giving you sideways rain. In 24 hours, it's been a 40-degree swing in this town. It's like old man Winter just started draining threes. He's on a run, an 18-0 run, a 40-degree run for old man Winter, and it counts. Take a 20-second timeout, Chicago. Stop the bleeding. In sports, after a long rain delay this afternoon, the Cubs started back up and promptly gave up the game. Best part of the long rain delay is seeing all the upper deck fans get a chance to come down and sit in the front rows. They deserve it, right? After waiting out rain in 40-degree weather. But before the rain, the game was very competitive, a back-and-forth slugfest through the first six. Eddie Butler only got through three innings after walking five guys. Not good for the youngster if he wants to stay up in the bigs. The Cubs are having a bit of a problem with their fifth starter these days. Two words, Jason Hamill, right? Give the Royals a ham sandwich, and I'm sure we can get Ham Jam back in town. Yeah, right? Come on. Hamill should be nowhere else but here. Perfect fifth starter. And then when you get close to August, you're like, we don't need you anymore because we're only going to pitch two pitchers in the playoffs. That's how we do it. And closers come in the sixth inning. The White Sox are getting closer and closer to being the team from the natural before Roy Hobbs shows up. Losing is a disease. The Sox lost again last night. They hope to rebound tonight against Seattle. They've lost four in a row and are four back in the AL Central. They're half game ahead of the Royals. So another loss tonight. The Sox, well, they're going to be in the cellar. What a difference 2 weeks makes in baseball. We're calling for Moncada to come up. Now we're like, don't rush. No, keep him down there. We'll see him next spring. This weekend, 19-year-old Cuban phenom Luis Robert will be cleared to sign with any major league team. And the rumors are that the Sox are interested. I say do it, right? The other team interested, the Cardinals, so double do it. Anaheim tied up the series with the Predators last night, 2-2. Can the Stanley Cup playoffs be more uninspiring? I guess Pittsburgh, but, I mean, really, right now, we could see a Nashville-Ottawa Cup. I hope the NHL remembers that the next time a defender interferes with Corey Crawford and they don't call it. This is what you get. You call it, and more people will like hockey for longer. Just a thing. Tonight in the NBA playoffs, LeBron versus Celtics, game 2. The Bears signed rookie tight end Adam Shaheen to a 4-year deal today, so double meat Chipotle burritos for everybody. Not since the fridge has Chicago media had such an interest in what food an athlete eats. Oh, Shaheen does double meat on his burritos? Click, 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 click. Can't click through fast enough. all of those page views for double meat burritos. And finally tonight, this weekend marks the triumphant return of the classic television program Twin Peaks. In honor of this occasion, we're going to drink coffee, eat cherry pie, and do the last sentence of the carryout backwards. She see it out roof May 19, 2017. Ba doog time. It's hard to recreate the sort of the Black Lodge, the end of Twin Peaks on the radio, but you get my idea. Coming up, we're going to talk with Cook County Commissioner Richard Boykin about Facebook Live and the challenges with that. And we'll reload this week's news. It's a download. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm good. Ready for the weekend. You got any big plans? You're going to...
Well, yeah. Well, I'll race through the weekend like I usually do and then get back to work on Monday so I can relax. I mean, you know how it is. You've got a young one. I mean, you just keep going.
It's like, so funny.
You know, when does it end? So it starts with soccer at 9 tomorrow morning with my daughter. It will continue on midday with skating and hockey with my son. And then, I don't know, there's probably something going on tomorrow night that I don't know about yet.
I am off the hook just a little bit because tonight, movie night at the with my son, is the fifth Harry Potter movie.
Oh,
I forgot which one it is. Goblet of Fire, perhaps?
It's the Goblet of the Secret Stone or something like that.
Right. So at least I get to miss that. Then I'm going to pick up again with the, I think tomorrow night or Sunday, it's the final ones.
Yeah.
But at least I get to skip a couple. And I realize I've already had to do that. Just, I think last Friday, he watched one of them. And I don't miss much, except the growth of the teenagers, like the Daniel Radcliffe. You know, and like you're like, now I've skipped 5 years in his life. Well, he's a lot bigger than I remember him.
It's like missing 2 years of Days of Our Lives. I mean, the story doesn't really advance all that much.
That's a good description. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Thanks, Rob. Justin Kaufman coming up at 8 o'clock. Carol Felsenthal from Chicago Magazine. Lee Bay, architecture critic, going to be in studio tonight to reload this week's news. Lots to talk about. The winners, the losers, overreported, underreported. What story is going to be remembered in 5, 10, 50, 500 years from this week? Lee and Carol, myself, will break it down coming after 8 o'clock. And you can join as well, 312-981-7200. Well, about a month ago, Chicago community leaders called for Facebook to put a 30-day moratorium on Facebook Live, the immediate broadcast function for the site. The reason? Too many people were broadcasting crime. And it runs the gamut. Drug use, beatings, shootings, and in some cases, murders have been broadcast on the social media platform, not to mention suicides. Facebook has not changed the service, but according to Cook County Commissioner Richard Boykin, they are listening. They're in conversation with not just community leaders, but law enforcement. And just yesterday, Boykin took Facebook to some Chicago-area schools to learn more about what the kids think of the peculiar moment in broadcast history. Cook County Commissioner Richard Boykin represents parts of the west side of Chicago, and he joins me now. Commissioner Boykin, thanks for being here.
Justin, thank you so very much for having me. I'm honored to be back.
So let's talk about the meetings. I mean, this will be the second time Facebook you've been able to engage with Facebook. Where are you at in the process of trying to find a way for them to actually do something about crime being broadcast on Facebook Live?
Look, I think we're making tremendous progress. I think that there's a real recognition by Mark Zuckerberg and the executives at Facebook that there is a floor of decency beneath which we must never go. And I think that the indication that you saw them agree to hire 3,000 new individuals to monitor the content that's on Facebook and Facebook Live, and to get that negative, despicable, vile content down very quickly. So they're committed. Look, they're committed to making sure that they're a good corporate citizen. They're also committed to making sure that children are educated about what things to report. And so yesterday they were in town. We took them to Christ the King on the west side. We also took them to Urban Prep in Englewood. Mm-hmm. They met with a great group of students who you know, one of the things that was interesting for me is that they asked a question, how many people had saw despicable things on Facebook, and all of the hands went up. And they said, how many people have reported? No hands went up. And so that was interesting. And so the people asked the question, well, why didn't you report? They said, well, we didn't report because we thought somebody else might report it. And then somebody said, well, I didn't report it because it seemed normal. I mean, this stuff, this violent videos and stuff, all of it's become so normalized, and it's had a chilling effect, if you will, on our young people.
Yeah.
So I think we're moving in the right direction.
It's such an interesting development in our society, the idea that you can broadcast live from social media platforms and the fact that crime gets in on that broadcast platform. But there's also the question of what's the government's role in regulating platforms and broadcasts. Right now, there really isn't any regulation. So the only course of action for community leaders like yourself is to sort of engage with Facebook and hope on their own that they do something to change the tide.
Absolutely. Look, and I think it's also interesting because I don't think that young people want to see this thing regulated or the internet necessarily regulated in that way. It's a difficult balancing act between what's viable content and what's not content that ought to be shut down. And so I think that by hiring 3,000 more individuals added to 4,500 individuals already around the world, I think that they're making a step in the right direction. Look, there are 1.9 billion subscribers of Facebook, and that's a whole bunch of people. And Facebook Live is something of a new phenomenon. Mm-hmm. It's only a year old, if you will. And so, I mean, look, there's some unintended consequences that have taken place, and I think they're beginning to address those consequences of the advances in technology. But we don't want to see a chilling effect on the internet. We want to see the content that ought to be there stay there. But things like suicides, things like murders, things of that nature don't necessarily need to be there. And, of course, you remember the young lady, 15 years old, who was raped on Facebook Live. 40 people watched it, and nobody reported. And so we've become a nation that's basically become numb to this kind of violence. We don't want to be that way. We want to change the way of thinking.
Cook County,
so we're going to continue to work with them.
Cook County Commissioner Richard Boykin's on the line. We're talking about Facebook Live and engaging Facebook, the company, to find out ways in which they can, as you said, sort of set a floor of decency and not go below it. We talk about Facebook and what they can do from their end on the technology, but a lot of this also has to do with the people that are pressing the button to record crime. You took Facebook to the classroom yesterday to talk to some of the kids in the high schools you mentioned. Well, I mean, is there any thought about educating those kids about the severity and the consequences that go into recording crime, to broadcasting crime to other people, and not to mention the fact that they don't report it when they see it?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I shared with them is the story of DeKayla Dansberry. DeKayla was actually her death began with a threat on social media. And she had a fight after school last year with a young lady. The young lady stabbed her, and she lay in a pool of blood. Somebody pulled out their phone, and they Facebooked it live. And her mother got a call saying that your daughter is on Facebook lying in a pool of blood. That's how her mother found out about her death. We think that no mother should ever find out about some child's death in that manner. That's inhumane. So we got to teach people. We got to retrain people. We got to get inside the minds of people and their hearts and say, hey, wait a minute. Would you want your child to be lying in a pool of blood and you upload that on Facebook? It makes absolutely no sense. And so we've seen a lot of that in Chicago. I mean, quite frankly, Chicago has become the epicenter for a lot of this violence. And so Facebook is totally committed. And this is the second time that they've sat down with us. And we also had a great meeting at their headquarters last night where they met with a number of community organizations and children that we actually brought to their headquarters last night. And we gave them some ideas. Justin, we're going to be making a big announcement about something that's going to happen in Chicago first and may sweep across the nation to help in terms of a public awareness education type campaign around what to report and why it's important to report.
You know, as I think about the way social media obviously has connected so many communities, and we've heard the stories of how it's isolated them as well. I mean, we hear over and over the idea that the way that social media is being used, not only for when it comes to kids in school and you know, when they're ready, and obviously negative issues like bullying and other things that happen in social media. But we're also hearing more and more from law enforcement and others about how social media is used for gangs, for beefs, for, you know, the tendencies to actually have fights that spill over outside of the digital space and maybe even contribute to what we're seeing in the violence epidemic that's here in the city of Chicago. When you're a Cook County commissioner, you're a leader of the community, you're a leader on the west side, how do you view social media and the way that it's being used, especially when it comes to the negative impact on society?
Look, I think that social media has good intentions, but I think there's always those individuals out there who want to use it for negative things. And, you know, quite frankly, I commend Facebook and all the other social media entities who actually work with law enforcement. A lot of these people wind up getting arrested because of what's done on social media, what they say on social media. They can share that information with law enforcement. And I think that's the tremendous thing about social media. But, you know, what I would say is this. It does have a negative consequence when you know, gangs are recruiting via social media. So what we did in Cook County is we created a social media gang task force. And we're working with Sheriff Tom Dart and others to make sure that our officers are trained on what it is that they need to look for, what keywords they need to look for, and that sort of thing in terms of gang recruitment, in terms of drug sales and that sort of thing. So we're doing everything that we can to keep up with the technological age and keep up with these folks who would use social media in a negative way.
For the last question I'll ask is just about Facebook. I mean, you had two meetings with Facebook, and they were good, and you were just explaining it to us now. How do you see that relationship moving forward? And do you see companies like Facebook or others like Twitter or others that Snapchat that are going to have more dialogue with our government, with government leaders, with community leaders as they move forward and maybe even develop new platforms and new technologies?
Absolutely, no question about it. Look, government can help Facebook, and Facebook can help government. And the same with the other social media outlets. I mean, we're interconnected. We're dependent upon each other. And so government can either regulate these instruments or government can let them go unfettered without regulation. And, you know, quite frankly, I'd rather see it that way and see us work together in a partnership to make sure that we protect our children. All of us have that in mind, that we want to protect our children from certain content. When I was growing up, there were certain things that I never saw. But quite frankly, children today are very curious, and all of them, many of them have cell phones, computers. And so they share these videos or share things that have been uploaded. And by the time you share it with somebody, you've already captured them. It's already become a part of them. And so we want to shield them from that kind of content. So we look forward to working with Facebook and other social media giants, and hopefully we'll see Mark Zuckerberg in Chicago very soon.
Cook County Commissioner represents the 1st District, Richard Boykin, joining us to talk about his conversations with Facebook, the company, to talk about Facebook Live and how we can keep some of the nasty stuff off of there. Commissioner Boykin, thanks for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Justin. I look forward to seeing you in studio next time.
There's another story just about Facebook Live that was in the paper today, but it was a court case where a guy beat somebody up, and then, of course, you know, 15 people pulled up their phones and uploaded it to Facebook while the guy was beating them up. Of course, the guy who was being beaten up was killed. And there was question. This was the court case. It didn't happen today. It was a court case. It was a South Side, it was Green Line. So I forgot where it was at. It's 63rd, maybe? Green Line? It was right in front of the station. And the judge kind of rolled her eyes and questioned, you know, let me guess, this made it to Facebook. There were people, you know, same concept. People were filming this? Let me guess, it ended up at Facebook. They're like, yes, it did. And there's something to be said about. I mean, we have a, I think Commissioner Boykin hit it on the head that we're having a not only an issue about what's being broadcast, but we're having an issue about what our role is when we see the broadcast. And in some cases, when it's right in front of us and we choose to broadcast. I mean, I get it, citizen journalist, but come on.
They should, maybe they should do a you know, how they have those Facebook Live commercials where they show some, you know, kid like rafting or, you know, something, and then you see the likes and the hearts and stuff, you know, floating up. They should do one where they show somebody getting beaten up and then, like,
and shuts,
you know,
down,
and then shuts down and report, you know, when you see something, say something.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, it's not, actually, it's a great idea. Like a PSA, you know, campaign would not be a bad thing for Facebook to say, don't do this. Especially if you can, in the way of doing the PSA, let the people know that they're being watched. And when you do Facebook Live, we're watching you. So if you are, you know, if you're watching a crime being committed, you're committing a crime as well. That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I mean, because some people text in saying, you can't really regulate the internet. Congress is not going to be able to do that. Parents have a role and responsibility. I'm like, well, you know, I think that in the worst case scenarios, we talk about 13, 14, 15-year-olds being involved in this. But a lot of time, we're talking about young adults. We're talking about 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds. I mean, when the guy who was busted today, who was doing the beating, they're not kids.
Mm-hmm.
They're young adults. And so I don't know if there's even a parental responsibility. I mean, moms paying attention to their 20-year-old kids doesn't live there anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like far too often that becomes like a knee jerk. Like, how can we? Because I just don't know. And it's such a tremendous conversation to have as a society about how we grapple with new technology that we have control over. Used to be new technology was, I got a good 8-track. Awesome. But we didn't get to make our own 8-tracks. Right, we didn't get to choose not only what went on the 8-track, but then be able to disperse it to everybody so they could listen to our 8-track. That's what technology has done. I mean, I think it's wonderful and an amazing experience to be able to have make your own media and to share it with a following without having to go through some tastemaker or some gatekeeper. But this is the byproduct where we're seeing more and more people shooting. You know, or and with the intent. It's not like they walked up on a scene and they're like, let me show you. Oh, I'm going to press record so my followers can see it. You've seen a couple times now where the Facebook's on like, hey, I'm about to do this. Watch what I'm about to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's some scary stuff. We'll continue. It's interesting to see what comes in, what Commissioner Boykin's talking about and what Facebook may do coming up here with regulation. We'll continue to talk about this topic on the download. All right, coming up, we're going to reload this week's news. I'm very excited to have Lee Bay, Carol Felsenthal in studio tonight. Winners, losers, overreported, underreported, biggest stories. Which story is going to be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 50, 500 years from this week? We'll find out. All right, it's a download here on 720 WGN. It's time to reload this week's news. I'm excited about this. We've got the winners and losers, the biggest stories, the overreported, the underreported, which stories sucked us down the rabbit hole, and of course, which story will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 50, 100 years, 500 years from tonight or this week. Joining me in studio, two download regulars and two of my favorite people, Lee Bay. Lee, how are you? Good to see you.
Good to see
Lee,
you,
Lee, a longtime architecture critic here in Chicago, as well as a former columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times. Carol Felsenthal. Good to see you, Carol. Thanks for being here. Carol is a political columnist for Chicago Magazine. Also does some stuff for Politico as well. Great to see you. Thanks for being
here. Thank you for inviting me.
All right. So we're ready to reload this week's news. I guess we started at the top with the biggest story of the week. Wowzers. All three of us, the story of James Comey and the continuing investigation surrounding Russia. I mean, what can we add to this story that the D.C. D.C. political reporters aren't? I mean, they are just on it. Every hour, it seems like there's a new wrinkle to the story, a new source. I mean, this is a weird time for American politics.
And as we get to the evening every night, we there is a new revelation. Tonight's revelation is that Trump told the Russian ambassador and the Russian foreign minister that Comey was a nut job and that getting rid of him would take the pressure off of Trump, which is exactly what this new special counsel, one of the things that he's investigating, and of course the House and Senate are supposedly investigating too. So each layer of lunacy keeps the story going while Trump's on Air Force One going to Where's he going, for Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, for Saudi Arabia, which is a story in itself as well. But Lee, I mean, what's your take on this? I mean, we've talked a lot about news and politics and, you know, in our careers, and this is something that it's such a head scratcher to me. Donald Trump and his administration says it's a witch hunt. The media and the Democrats say no, you've obstructed justice. You know, and now we're starting to see trends where words like impeachment are coming up. I mean, what is happening?
You know, it is clearly, you know, fascinating beyond, you know, a guy my age, I'm 51, 52 this year. You know, Watergate was a thing when I was a kid, obviously, and the thing my parents made me watch. You know, I think in the end, this could eclipse that in terms of the, my God, where are we? You know, in 20 years from now, when we'll have these documentaries on television, these pop culture documentaries about what marks this decade, this is going to be the thing that does it. But the thing about it is, at least with Nixon, it was a surprise, right? When you, when you elect a reality show type to be president of the United States, this is what you get. And there's nothing in Trump's past that would lead you to believe he would be anything else other than what he is now. And I think that it's our American belief in a happy ending. You know, the guy goes to Washington and makes a change. The soccer mom becomes president of the city council and makes change. That I think we pushed him in on, in addition to all the other stuff that we can talk about from another show.
Right.
But we can't be surprised that this is where he's leading us. I'm only surprised it happened this quickly.
Are you surprised, Carol? I mean, what's happening?
I think there are two I words. There's impeachment, which is a mistake, I believe, to be predicting that, to be making people think that this is going to be something that's going to happen within the month. For one thing, the special counsel, Robert Mueller, he could be working on this for 2 to 3 years. At the least, he's going to be going on this for a year and a half.
October.
The other I word, indictment. Well, there may be Mike Flynn will be indicted. But I think that we should not underestimate Trump and his ability to come back and his ability to create such chaos that one cannot process one piece of chaos before the next piece hits. And I think that we also, political reporters made a terrible mistake in underestimating the support for Trump outside in the country and how much people despise the big newspapers, the Washington Post and the New York Times. They've been at the top
story. Chris Roebling is in here on Monday talking about this is the Washington Post wants to take the president down and it's all about egos. I don't know. I get that concept, but I also at the same time, if we're talking about, I mean, when you straight ahead, you hear the president say, or it's reported and sources are leaking, and that might be what people are angry about. But the concept of, you know, the FBI director's a nut job. He's talking to the Russians. It's the nut job. I had to get rid of him to ease this investigation. I mean, that sounds a lot like obstruction of justice, but I didn't hear the tone in which he was talking about.
It sounds a little bit like LBJ, too. It's not like this is the first president. I mean, you know, I don't want to get too graphic about this, but LBJ used to have congressmen accompanying him to the toilet, and he used that as a way to humiliate. Trump, as far as we know, has not carried humility. Trump is all about appearance anyway, so that wouldn't be his thing.
Right.
But we had Richard Nixon talking to portraits of his predecessors on the wall of the White House being drunk. One thing about Trump, could you imagine if Trump were a drinker, what that would be like? Because, you know, his brother died an alcoholic, and Trump does not drink at all. But he's not sober. He seems crazy, but his people, for example, Congresswoman Maxine Waters, who has turned into a heroine, especially the left, she's been calling for indictment before took the oath of office. And I think while she's a kind of a folk hero to some, to others, she's everything that's wrong.
Well, I mean, once again, here we go down the partisan road, because we heard Republicans saying if Hillary Clinton wins, we're gonna impeach her before she starts. You hear Democrats on the, saying, well, you know, we should indict President Trump before he even gets in the office. All the things about his conflicts of interest. I mean, this was, as you said, Lee, it's surprise. Maybe it's the surprise that it happened this quick. But I mean, it has this feel of an inevitable showdown that was just bubbling and bubbling and bubbling. And yeah, I don't know necessarily how it's going to end here.
Yeah, you know, and none of us do. But it makes the belly swim, though, in a way. I mean, here's a person who, who is complaining about being crucified, but yet nails himself to the cross, right? I mean, it's like some of this stuff is of his own making. And the Russian thing is just amazing. I mean, even if. And again, Comey, and you're absolutely right, Carol. I mean, Comey's got a—I mean, you look along the Nixon investigation didn't take like a week and a half. I mean,
it took a while.
And his teams of people, combing through this. But still, I mean, he's his own worst enemy, I think, in this regard. But I'll agree. I mean, there is a crazy method to it, because he's able to shovel so much of it into the town square that you can't really
But what was the deal with the tweet, Jim Comey better, or James Comey, I think he called him, better be careful, there may be tapes? And did he not live through Watergate? This guy's 70 years old. He was an adult during Watergate. Does he not remember the tapes? Now those will be subpoenaed.
Exactly.
One little detail that's interesting to mention is President Obama taped in the Oval Office, and it's not something that's talked about very much, but there was a great anecdote that I read. A man who was writing a book about the capture and the death, the assassination of Osama bin Laden, goes to the Oval Office to interview President Obama, and he has his little digital tape recorder, what I used to do interviews, and what has happened to us all probably one time or another. You're leaving the Oval Office, and you realize your recorder wasn't working. Well, he was devastated. Here he is. He can't tell Obama that he was such a fool that his tape didn't work. So he's on his way out with this guy Rhodes, who was a foreign policy advisor to President Obama and the guy behind the Iran deal. And Rhodes says to him, oh, don't worry, we tape. And before he leaves the White House, he has a printout. I think it was a printout.
A transcript. Wow.
The interview.
Well,
so you're saying.
Let me ask that question, because I will play devil's advocate as well. I mean, is Donald Trump being held to a different standard? As he says, he's the most unfairly treated president. But, I mean, we have had presidents in the past. You mentioned LBJ, Nixon. I mean, we just heard
Kennedy
about Obama.
Would appreciate the fact that he got treated a little bit worse than
True, of course. But the idea that, the establishment in the White House is using a lot of the things that politicians do that the public doesn't know about to sort of rake Donald Trump over the coals. I mean, Donald Trump, in a certain way, like whether it be tapes or whether it be, what classified information and telling the Russians. I mean, that's stuff that a lot of politicians and presidents have done. Why is it different than Donald Trump?
You know, it's the through line through all that makes things a little bit suspect, right? I mean, and it's the same characters. It's always Russia. It's never Italy. It's never Portugal, right? It all comes back to Russia. I think that again, he gets himself into trouble. I mean, he raises the specter of tapes, himself.
You're right.
I mean, it's just. I think that's the case. I mean, I think that people, I think also that, when you come into office a certain way, that tends to be the way that you're judged. I mean, Obama comes in, there's no drama Obama. Had there been drama on his watch, even if it was not as bad as Nixon and maybe less than Clinton, he would have had to walk the plank for that in some respect. He would have to answer to that. I think when you come in slinging mud and making accusations, as this president did, this is the thing you should get judged
by. He's not making friends.
And so much, talk about no drama Obama, which is absolutely true. I think Obama is more and more admired. You just look at him now. You love the slimness and the coolness of this guy. And you say, where is he? Mm-hmm. But then you have these dramatic effects like Mike Flynn at the DNC convention saying, lock her up,
the RNC,
lock her
up.
The irony of
that. There's a delicious irony to everything that's happening in this weird, weird story that continues to be, contrast, contradictions,
if he could govern, Americans would overlook it. If he could govern the country – Americans could at some point overlook it. But I think you can't have this and not be able to govern. And you just, you know, here in Chicago, I mean, we, as you know, we put up with a lot of things over the decades you and I have been around, the three of us have been around. But when a city can be well governed, and as it was during some times in there, you're kind of willing, is my garbage getting picked up? You know,
right.
Is it,
that's the old adage,
The taxes aren't taking too big of a bite out of me. I'm mad about it. But if you can't govern, and you got this drama around you,
and you don't read briefing papers because you have the attention span of an insect. You don't read briefing papers. You don't take the personal intelligent briefs. And what I hear, Trump doesn't get that. He can't keep ideas in his mind, and he has no knowledge. He has no base of knowledge that. Probably your son has a bigger base of knowledge.
maybe. If you put a screen in front of
my son does.
Carol Belsenthal, Lee Bay. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do overreported and underreported. It's the download. Stay with us. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. The phone number. All right. Let's do winners and losers, because, you know, I want to do overreported and underreported as well. But overreported is kind of, you know, talk about male fashion. So let's talk about winners, because, Carol, you have a list of winners that are not unlike what we were just talking about, the Russian investigation. But you say the number one winner.
Right. The number one is Jim Comey. And he's number one because he was everybody's evil man of the week. He had that, that weird look. He's got those big bags under his eyes. It's like he never sleeps. And after, on October 28th, what was that, a week before the election, about, or a little more, 10 days maybe, he comes out and he says, we're reopening the Hillary Clinton email. It seemed like he just had it in for her and he was going to do her in, and Democrats were as angry as could be. And then Trump comes up with this kind of, you have to wonder how he thinks. He said, I thought this would be a popular decision. The way he put it, it would be a bipartisan decision because the Democrats hated him so much, and that firing him
you're absolutely right.
Would be popular. Yeah. So I'd say Jim Comey, who went from being a dog to being a hero FBI agent, straight.
It's
as,
so true. Like, everyone's like, huh, dude, a free Comey. Like, that's what we're getting right now. This is ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, you're right. Trump would have fired him right away.
When he came to testify before Congress and he made that blooper, this is like a week or 10 days ago, and he said there were hundreds of thousands of Hillary emails, and he said it with such conviction and such kind of a steely gaze, and he was completely wrong. There weren't hundreds of thousands. There were maybe 400 or something. I mean, there were some, but not all those.
Yeah, they made it seem like it was a huge,
hyperbolic. Yeah. And it wasn't the kind of thing that you'd expect for somebody under oath before. I don't know whether he was under oath.
Lee, what do you got for winners?
I'm thinking a little bit more local. I think the North Side becomes a
love
winner.
Love this story.
For the North Branch Industrial Corridor Framework Plan. Wonky as that sounds, but it's a framework plan to redevelop city guidelines to redevelop the riverfront from around Kinzie to somewhere around Fullerton. Why that's important is because, you know, this will shape the city for the next 50 to 100 years. It's probably one of the first times in the city of urban planning, right? One of the first large-scale examples of true urban planning that the city has done. But again, the spoils go north of Madison once again. So I don't want to say the South Side is losing, but again, the North Side comes up with...
Well, you can make an argument. I mean, you have a tremendous couple of years here in urban planning and development, whether it be the Obama Center on the South Side or the redevelopment of the North Branch of the Chicago River. Obviously, the redevelopment of the North Branch of Chicago River is going to be a huge deal, just in property values alone. I mean, it's funny when you look at the aerial, what they want to do is amazing when you look at the report. But when you look at the aerial space now along the river, it really does paint a picture of a bygone era.
Yeah.
The going up Goose Island, you're like, those are all, you just see it. Like, you see all around it development in a different type of city, and then a city from the 70s, or something that's right in the middle of the heart of the north side of Chicago.
You know, it is, and changing fast. And what it's doing is, and again, you know, when I say the north side is winning again, I'm a little rueful about that in a way, because, you know, what you're seeing is between 24th Street to the south, Fullerton to the north, and the lake to Ashland to Western, this city within a city, which is very wealthy and increasingly with increasing wealth, increasing density, increasing jobs, those kind of things. And, you know, what happens to what's happening on the margins, south of that, west of that, and somewhat north of that. But for now, I would say, and I'm hoping that what comes out of this is that is good ideas that can be transported to other parts of the city. South Branch, right? The south side has a southwest side has a branch, Calumet River to the further south. So I'm hoping that something can happen there other than just merely development.
I do remember this. I remember when breaking down the numbers of who voted for Mayor Rahm Emanuel in the mayoral election. If you go right up the gut of the north side of Chicago through the North Branch and all those neighborhoods, that's where he drew his strength.
Oh yeah,
his strength, but he's got to run again in 2019.
Yeah, well, he's taking care of his crew there. I mean, the other one I want to say winners on top of it is also, I don't want to say losers yet because it's, you know, it's all speculation, but. Mm-hmm. The development company Sterling Bay, a company that
relation to me.
No relation, of course. They are a development company. They have been the ones gobbling up the land along the river, whether it be Finkel and Son Steel or the tannery there. And just this week, the scrap metal place that's cashing out. You get this idea that it's a progressive thought and we're moving forward, yet you have this thing lurking in the back, which is the old Chicago way, where this development company is. I mean, they said it in Cranes. It was in the piece where, like, we bought up all this land on a hunch that someday it might be redeveloped. I'm like, really? You're putting hundreds of million dollars in on a hunch?
But, you know, I'm inclined to think that's the case. I mean, if they buy it.
Because they laxed the zoning this week. This is the week that the city council said, all right, we're going to change the zoning.
That's true. But
who wins on that?
Well, they
Sterling
do. But it doesn't take a tremendously. It takes a rich person, a rich entity. It doesn't take a necessarily smart entity to know that's where development is going to happen in Chicago, and that's where a mayor is more likely, if you buy property there, to sort of decide things in your favor. If Sterling Bay buys property at 67th and Racine, and then it turns out to be rich and gets rich off that, then I'll say, these guys are doing something.
That's the Chicago way.
All of a sudden, right?
Right. But Goose Island, it's just a good business.
Exactly. Yeah, and a pretty obvious one.
I trust you on that. Yeah. Okay. What else do we got? Those are my winners. I also had, talk about Springfield. I feel like J.B. Pritzker, even though this week you could put him in winners or losers, mm-hmm. and we'll talk about.
I put him in the losers because I thought that story, that great reporter for the Sun Times,
a very interesting story, and I wonder if it sticks. And I guess that's my point. But
it's going to be in every commercial that you could imagine about how he
property
saves money and how he refurbishes the outside of the house so that his house looks like it's next to another nice house, but inside he's got all the toilets ripped out and he gets this deal on his taxes. I thought it sounded terrible. And I think that all of this money being thrown around by Ken Griffin in Rauner's hands.
Bruce Rauner's a winner. And the fact he got $20 million from Ken Griffin this week.
Yeah, but he and Pritzker, and then in the tier just below Kennedy. But it makes those other two guys, Daniel Biss, and Amaya Paywar, sound like there's just a kind of an earnestness to those two guys that is very appealing, and they're running against this money in politics.
Yeah.
And what do we need to know that we don't know after these couple of years of Bruce Rauner?
Right.
And
well, let's do this. Mm-hmm. Lee Bay, Carol Felsenthal, my guests tonight as we reload the news, 312-981-7200. We'll do this. We'll come back and we'll talk more about Springfield, and we'll talk about the losers of the week. That's a segment coming up after Rob's news, which is right now here on 720 WGN, which is... Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. We're reloading this week's news. 312-981-7200. Carol Felsenthal, Chicago Magazine political columnist, as well as a writer for Politico. You still doing that?
I'm doing, yeah, The Hill.
The Hill. Oh, yeah.
The Hill also. That's The Hill is
Yeah,
great.
I like The Hill, yeah.
They've been having a lot of scoops.
I was going to say, The Hill is a winner, I would say, on this story for Trump, because I see The Hill every single day. I find myself reading The Hill.
Well, the thing about The Hill that's interesting is that it seems it has a kind of a bipartisan flavor to it. I've been reading The Washington Post. I used to get it in the mail, in my mailbox with all the grocery ads. I love The Washington Post. But you look at The Washington Post online now, and every story, both in politics, front page, opinion, is Trump is awful, Trump is awful, yeah. Trump's got to go. It's just, and after a while, no matter how you feel about Trump, you feel like there's some kind of overload. So you get to a website like The Hill, and it's a little bit of a relief because they attempt to at least try to be a little more complex.
Well, you know, I hate to say it, but I mean, they follow the clicks in some way. Yeah. And The Washington Post is doubling down on the idea that people are clicking through. It's New York Times probably too. They've had really great seasons for newspapers and websites.
You look at the comments on some of those Washington Post stories, and they are in the high thousands, of, you know, way, way up there. Hmm. So people are reading the Post, and people who read the Post don't like Donald Trump, so they're playing to their audience.
Right, right.
But that's not what a newspaper's supposed to do.
Yeah, agreed, agreed. Lee Bay also in studio, a former Chicago Sun-Times, former everything. Yes. Former everything. That's Lee Bay is here. We'll just stop right there. Right, right. All right, so let's do this. Let's talk about the losers. We talked about the winners coming up. Losers, you both got long lists, laundry lists of losers.
Okay. I'll give you my list and just give you a little. Rod Rosenstein, who was considered to be a great Justice Department guy, and then he goes and he writes that memo, which looks like he's doing Donald Trump's dirty work, and now he's in big trouble, and nobody seems to respect him anymore. Mike Pence, caught in a couple of lies.
Disappeared. He's not really been in it. Yeah.
Well, but he was caught in a couple of big bloopers, and that seems to have taken him off the Boy Scout route. H.R. McMaster, another one, National Security Advisor, really respected guy. He goes out and does that press conference defending Trump.
Yeah.
It didn't seem right. Joe Lieberman, now there's another one where Trump said, he's going to be my FBI guy and he's going to get 100 votes in the Senate. Trump must never have really read anything other than the New York Post, because he doesn't understand that Democrats don't like Joe Lieberman. First of all, he's an independent. Second of
he
all,
flipped,
he
yeah.
was a McCain supporter.
Parties, right?
Spicer, of course, Mike Flynn, Paul Ryan.
You get the whole
all Republicans. Ivanka, whose book has been reviewed in some of the harshest terms I've ever seen, and it's not even doing well. Mm-hmm. And this other guy, and then I'm going to give this up, but the other one is David Garrow, who is a Pulitzer Prize-winning biographer of Martin Luther King, and he writes what I think is in some ways a really fascinating book about Obama, digs up this old girlfriend, making it look like he married Michelle for a political reason. His book is getting nasty reviews and not doing well either.
Wow.
So I'll stop.
There you go, Carol.
That's a good
there
list. Excellent list.
All right. Well, let's go local. I mean, because I like the one you have, Lee, and this is one that really hits home for all of us, really, is you have the Chicago Sun-Times. A big media story this week.
You know, I do. And, of course, many of you know that Chicago Sun-Times is my former home. I spent 10 years there back in the 90s and early 2000s. And it's under the hand of Trunk. That's funny. I can't quite say the name. The former Tribune Media Company. And it will place both papers under single ownership. Mm-hmm. One can help but wonder what that does to the Sun-Times future. I mean, it certainly saves it in the short run, but you wonder what happens in the future. And if it remains a two-paper town, you know, you're always going to have one that'll be above, that'll be, you know, more capitalized than the other. I would wish, we talked about the Washington Post. I would wish, the guy who owns Amazon could have stepped in. Someone else could have stepped in to give the paper the capital.
Chicago has a long-standing pride on the fact that this is a two newspaper town. There are a lot of towns we've seen that have brought them together. I think of Detroit, maybe Philadelphia,
Houston, Cincinnati.
I mean, this is a trend that's not abnormal. Mm-hmm. But Chicago, for whatever reason, and it might just be because of the politics, the perceived politics behind the editorials on both sides. One was more conservative and one was more liberal. One was more suburban. One was more city. But there seemed to be this great sort of yin and yang between the Chicago Tribune and the Chicago Sun-Times. And I think that maybe that you're seeing right now is when people see that one's going to buy the other, there is this sort of shed a tear mentality.
It really is. I mean, you know, two papers that were competitive. I mean, I remember even before Architecture, certainly with Architecture, even before Architecture, you know, you wanted to beat the other guy, beat the other paper. And, and the voices were different. And, of course, they were founded, you know, one founded, you know, to stress conservative ideals. One founded and put together and founded after the war as kind of a paper for FDR and that. I mean, and it's a great history that I think is at risk. And yet, you know, Chicago is still two cities, right? I mean, part of the reason for that, for what you've mm-hmm. discussed and the sort of summation of why we're supporting two papers is because Chicago really is two cities in one. And I think that, more than two cities, actually. And I think that having those two separate voices would be a good thing. But it's tough.
Let's say, I mean, Carol, you've been, you know, full disclosure, I mean, you write for a publication that's owned by Tronc, right?
Right, right. Somebody said that the word Tronc, which mm-hmm. you didn't want to say, you said it sounds like something that an angry caveman would say. And I thought that was pretty good because it's weird. And I think your idea about Jeff Bezos, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that would be, you know, why? Somebody ought to call that guy, because when the Grahams sold, Don Graham, Kay Graham's son, sold to him, everybody thought, oh, this is the end of fine journalism. All he's done is brought readers to that paper, exactly. And resources. They're hiring mm-hmm. at the mm-hmm. Washington Post. Let's get Bezos in here. And
well, I mean,
Amazon is putting a lot of money into the state. That's a great idea.
Say what you will about the Tribune and Michael Farrow and Tronc, but he is a local businessman. He's not somebody who's coming in from somewhere. He's not a huge. They're not a huge corporation in the sense that they're, you know, just buying up a nondescript gobble gobble in the city. I mean, the Tribune, he used to own the Sun-Times, mm-hmm. and now he's moving. I mean, what about the concept that you know, when you talk to anyone at Tronc, they say, well, we're interested in the paper, and we're not necessarily interested in making it one. Like, we want to make it two, and they'd be independent. Do you buy that kind of thing? Do you think that maybe there is a life to the idea that there could be two separate media entities in Chicago owned by the same person?
But what kind of life, I guess? I mean, is it a life in which Jenny McCarthy is a columnist? And that's the columnist of our generation, not another Mike Royko, not another Vernon Jarrett, that kind of thing. So, yeah, you know, it's like, I remember, it's like the Bullwinkle cartoon, right, that I saw when I was a kid that cracked me up, and Boris falls out of the plane and hits the ground, and Natasha runs over and says, Boris, you are living. And he's like all wrecked, and he says, this is living? And that's how I feel about the paper. I mean, I wish it could be in better hands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well,
and we haven't mentioned the Reader.
Yeah, that was last week's story, right?
On the Reader here in Chicago, and that, it seems to be in jeopardy. Mm-hmm. And my buddy Mike Miner just
retiring, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's a big story. Mm-hmm. And you know, last week Kevin Warwick was on. He was here for he reloaded with us, and he's the associate editor at the Trib or at the Reader. And we talked about that they posted their salaries. They put their salaries
That's
on a piece of paper on the window, and that picture went viral and showed how little money the Reader staffers, longtime staffers, you know, highly sought after positions were getting paid, and it makes you really sort of understand a little bit more about why the Chicago Reader has been really kind of making a move to get the Sun-Times to first to unionize mm-hmm. and then to say, listen, we need a living wage. So I mean, there's a lot of trouble over there, and maybe Michael Farrow comes in and
But I hate for it to lose its independent voice. You know, there's one paper to the left, perhaps, one paper to the right, and then there's one that kind of does its own thing. And I think that vibrant cities need that kind of funky paper that can take on police brutality and corruption in ways that neither paper has done over the past 25 years. The work that John Conroy did exposing the horrors of Area 2 years ago. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you wonder will be at risk under one ownership. Not that anyone's necessarily suppressing it, but, you know, one man, one vision. You can only think of so many things that the guy who wants to play with the bicycle that he bought, you know, you wonder if there's an appetite for that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, the Sun-Times editorial page was conservative for a while, and then remember when they stopped endorsing candidates?
Yeah.
And then
they came out of retirement for Rauner.
Now there's a real distinction between those two editorial pages. The Tribune editorial page is quite conservative now, especially on economic issues, and the Sun-Times is quite liberal. The Tribune has an interesting editorial I read before I came here, which is negative on Lisa Madigan.
Incomplete, that's what they said.
Right. And I thought it was an interesting editorial, but it goes along with the Tribune is a supporter of Bruce Rauner. I mean, there's no other way to look at it.
Okay, so let's before we wrap up on losers, the other loser is I'm not even going to say his name because I'm not, but the gentleman who was caught on tape punching a security guard, a female security guard in the Gold Coast or the downtown area here after a night clubbing that was, like I said, was caught on tape and, you know, just widely spread across the country, became a viral hit of watching this crude experience of a security guard coming out and saying, "You got to go," and this guy getting violent. Not a good week for that guy, and not a good week for Chicago. I mean, I guess in a good way, it was great to watch Chicago get mad. It was almost like this guy punched Chicago. You know, you really can't do that.
You know, I agree, but I think that the designation is thematic. It goes to him and the women who are with him. One of whom was his wife, and the guy that was with him too. Because, you know, the thing about it is, you watch the tape and you think, if this guy. You would think that someone would say, "My God, what are you doing?" and pull him away or express some shock. But they look. He delivers a punch. They're looking at him. Three of them are at least. And they just sort of go on about their way. Yeah. So I think that the hat of shame needs to be worn by all of them. He's remorseful now, but one can't help but wonder if he's remorseful that he got caught, and more than he is remorseful over having done it. And looking at the tape again, it doesn't make any sense. The woman was trying to render some aid at some point and has to clean up the mess that he's made, and she has to suffer the indignity. But you're right. It was good to see Chicagoans mad at this. And, you know, obviously, you know, she's African-American. He isn't. And in this time we live in, when people are so polarized by issues of race, to see everyone sort of admit that this was wrong.
Yeah.
And this is not good. It was one silverish lining, I guess.
Lee Bay, Carol Felsenthal in studio. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and let's start our overreported and underreported, because we got a lot to do through that. Then we've got Rabbit Hole, and then we've got what story is going to be remembered from this week when it comes to history. So download. Stay with us. It's a download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, Carol Felsenthal, Lee Bay in studio. We are reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. Let's go for overreported and, of course, underreported. Overreported, I mean, the story, we'll just kind of gloss over the overreported. The story I thought was overreported was the male rompers. This was the romper is the piece of fashion. And a company raised tons of money to take the female fashion and make it male fashion. And everyone thought it was crazy. And that's where we're at. That's it. That's the overreported story, right? And also the millionaire saying avocado toast. That the other one where I'm like, what is happening here?
But the way that was reported that I found so irritating is that the guy who was writing about it mostly managed to link it to the irresponsibility of millennials
who
can't buy a house because they're buying avocado toast. Although I must say, I go to New York a lot. My children live there. And in Brooklyn, my health-conscious daughter eats this stuff all the time, and I pay for it. And it is about, you know, it can cost like $15 to have toast with smashed avocado and a little red pepper on it.
Well, you're a good mom for picking that up.
You know, but it's funny. I mean, but to link it that, you know, the people this age, and I have two daughters this age, have been handed a crummy economy, crummy job prospects, crummy salaries, and avocado toast? Is the reason why it reminds me of people who complain about people buying expensive gym shoes. And it's like, well, you know, maybe it's not the wisest thing to do, but that isn't the reason why why people are poor.
I also feel like the idea of a millionaire kind of spouting off about why, you know, pick yourself up,
You know, if you would do this, you know, I feel like it's a stereotype too. And I know a lot of millennials who are probably doing a lot better than us in this room that are doing fine with understanding how they're going to live their lives.
Exactly.
Yet for some reason, it's always been that the generations above look down on the generations below, and it's just added to that fuel.
That's true. When I was young, right? You know, Generation X, you're a slacker. You're not doing anything.
Right.
It's like, I got two jobs. What do you expect out of me, right? What do you want from me?
But that whole theme started with Starbucks, and that's so ubiquitous that you're spending so much on coffee that you could make for pennies yourself if you happen to be in a place where you could make coffee.
Right. All right, let's go on to underreported. This is a much better part of the reload. Kara, what do you got for underreported?
Well, again, this is not politically correct, and many of my friends would probably disagree, but I think the leak aspect of this Russia story is being underreported. Mm. And when you see, like I did this afternoon, that there was somebody with access to sound or tapes or was eavesdropping or in the room who repeated. Now, this person is a Trump person, but there's leaks all over the place. And I do believe that a lot of the leaking is coming from the Obama people who were on his foreign policy team, especially. So I kind of agree with Donald Trump that it's not talked about enough.
Right.
And I just don't know how you manage to figure it out, since the people who work for Obama, not for Obama, for Trump, are panicking. They want out, so it's hard to kind of contain.
That's a hard story, and it's one that Donald Trump wants us to all pay attention to over the fact of the Russian investigation.
But it's really fascinating. If you go into Twitter, for instance, I mean, there are people like Claude Taylor and Louise Minch who report these things weeks in advance, and it turns out they're dead on.
Yep.
And they got sources there that are enviable. But you're right. It's the leaks that are coming out, and they're leaking accurately, which is
accurately and in such wonderful detail and such great storytelling detail.
Yeah. they took their storytelling classes.
You know, as usual, foreign stories, international stories, I think are really underreported. Yeah. Underreported. What happened with the Turkey's president's thugs, and these people are exercising their First Amendment right to protest, and they just came and they hurt these people physically.
In our country.
On American soil.
In our country.
In D.C.
In our country with, what's his name, the president Erdogan, sitting in his car watching it. And the last thing I read was that he gave a hand signal to his guys suits and shiny shoes.
How do we let that happen? I mean, who's in charge of upholding that? Would it be the White House, or who would be the one to say,
I bet you Trump's
you can't
envious.
Yeah.
You know, look what this guy can do. But
on our own
country. But I think
country.
What's really valiant, that's and no you can good. Catch him at the little bit in the clip, is that the uniformed police force there from I think these are Capitol Police. They broke it up, and some of those guys were delivering some pretty good whacks to the Turks who were doing the bad thing. And that's kind of underreported as well. But
but
that kind of thing is an outrage. And but this is well anyway that's another show. But it's an outrage, and one can't help
this
but
week's
wonder.
Outrage.
That's right. One can't help but wonder if a president like the president of Turkey is emboldened to do this because of who sits in the White House.
And because he just met with him.
Exactly.
He just met with him. You know, who knows what Trump said?
Yeah.
You know, good going. Like the way you
the
run
Russians
your
know.
Country.
The Russians
let's,
know.
Let's imprison everybody and arrest newspaper editors.
Yeah. Carol Felsenthal, Lee Bay, we're going to continue with underreported after the news, because I want to get to your underreported story, which is very fascinating, Lee. Also, we'll get to rabbit hole stories and which story will be remembered. It's a download. We're reloading this week's news here on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, 312-981-7200. We're gonna wrap this up by 9:30, but we got underreported, and then we're going to get to the rabbit hole stories. Lee Bay, your underreported story of the week.
Fascinating story by the Daily Southtown newspaper out of Markham, in which Markham, the suburb of Markham, southern suburb of Markham, has had 17 strip club and nightclub related shootings over the past 7 years, and almost 10 of them were at one club. And, you know, basically it's the end of the night and everybody's wild and emotions are high and guns are out. And what's fascinating about this is that the town, if it isn't a cover-up, it's as close as you can possibly get. They don't want to respond to inquiries about this. The neighbors can't figure out what to do. There are connected guys who are behind these clubs. And the fascinating thing, which is worth checking out, is the interview that the Southtown reporters did with the police chief of Markham. And he's saying in it, well, you know, yeah, there's shootings, but you got to keep in mind how many days these places are open. And so the shootings are relatively small compared to the, I don't know, the 300 days of the year that these places are open. And then he tells the reporters that, you know, he really wants to talk about, he wants to move on. He wants to talk about
positive
story.
Right.
But people say, you know, in neighborhoods and suburbs like this, you go through them and you say, well, look how these people live. And shame on them for living this way. But increasingly, and this is a thread that runs through all of it, is that so-called ghettos are made. They're connected, and people, no matter what their race may be, who own these clubs, who are able to get the protection from the city that regular people cannot get. Compare that to the River North here, when there's shootings.
You're done.
Here in Chicago.
If you get a shooting within the vicinity of a club, they're like, they got that orange sheet on there. Like,
yes,
yep,
they'll close you up. So, yeah. So you see these struggling suburbs out there, and you think, well, how do they get this way? And it always gets phrased like a question of morality or behavior of, you know, if they would pull their pants up, if they would do this. But these places are made by institutions that are far beyond and far richer than the people who
have
to suffer.
That's a good one. The Daily Southtown, check that out. Markham Strip Club, 17 shootings in 7 years.
Jeez.
Carol, what do you have for – let's go talk about the stories that sucked us down the rabbit hole. This is a story that people – doesn't necessarily have to do with breaking news or anything like that, but what are the stories that really kind of grabbed your attention this week? What story are you talking
well,
about?
Well, I'm – you know – Washington focused as I am lately, you know, the rabbit hole story for me was, you know, that I live and breathe this stuff, and I have the bags under my eyes to show it. I'm up in the middle of the night reading, and I'm going to write something. I probably should just save it for that, but I have the sense that Trump's going to resign. And I think that because he resigns, he becomes a martyr. He does these rallies across the country. He's the most famous, most popular man in America. He can denigrate Washington and the establishment and all that, and he can do it. And he doesn't have to live in that crummy White House anymore that's too small for him. Go back, live in his mansion in Mar-a-Lago. He can go back and live in his penthouse in Manhattan in the Trump Tower. He can sleep in his own great bed every night. He can eat better, crappy food. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't have to. The criticism, it must be just so painful to him. People are not going to make fun of his hair as much anymore, you know, now.
But, I mean, this guy, I mean, I'll play devil's advocate only on the sense that he has been in the public spotlight before he was even a reality star.
Right.
He was a billionaire, playboy, New York front page of the New York Post all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a joke on Saturday Night Live. He's been through criticism.
He's been through criticism, but you watch that correspondence dinner where Obama made fun of him. Mm-hmm. You look at his face. That was in 2011.
Right.
That's when he decided to run for president. And I think that he doesn't, you know, being president is just too much damn work for him. He doesn't want to read the briefing papers. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to get his daily intelligence. He knows nothing about the issues. He makes such rookie mistakes that I think, I don't know, I think I have a, that's my theory, and I'm going to go with it.
I like it. All right.
We all like it.
All right, so let's go ahead and continue on the rabbit hole story. And let's go back to you, Lee. This story, it's surprising to me because I know that it's not underreported, but because of all of the news that came out this week and everything that's happening in Washington, the death of Roger Ailes was not as talked about. I mean, and maybe we'll see it this weekend with pieces about the ramification or what he did to Fox News and just sort of the idea of what he left behind, what his legacy was. But that's sort of your rabbit hole story.
I find it fascinating. I mean, of course, if you watch Fox News, they've got purple bunting behind them when they're talking, but about him. But here's a guy who basically, to me, exploited. There's been a few postmortems about this and saying things like, you know, he led America astray. He did this, he did that. And all that is true. But he sold something that Americans wanted to buy. And that can't be lost. And it's the same thing that Goldwater sold. It's the same thing that George Wallace sold. It's the same thing that thousands of kind of tin horn Rush Limbaugh wannabes across America selling, and people are buying it. He was smart enough to create a network out of it, for better or for worse. But I think that what he's done to the American media landscape, what he's done to the American psyche, I think is endlessly fascinating to me. But it can't not be said that if something bad came from that, then Americans were complicit in it.
Yeah.
He wasn't like the guy who came to town like
there have been many of attempts. I mean, you think of there have been political talk shows, networks, radio networks, others that have failed. Fox News did not. And Roger Ailes, for if you agree with it or not, people wanted to watch it.
They do. And it's insidious because, you know, it starts off being sort of partisan and then it ratchets itself up. To what, if it isn't reporting falsehoods, it comes really close to doing
fair and balanced. You're kidding.
That's right. Yeah.
But you know, on the day that Roger Ailes died, I watched Fox News because I wanted to see how they reported it. I have never seen so many tears shed by so many of the Fox News stars who talked about Bret Baier. He didn't tear up, but he talked about when his son had open heart surgery, the first person who was there for him was Roger Ailes. I can't think of the guy's name. He's an older guy who came from, I think, ABC News. His son committed suicide, and he said Roger Ailes had a bad ankle. He traveled across the country to be at his side. Another woman was diagnosed with MS. Roger Ailes was... So you had that on the one end. On the other hand,
and
you have
the other
a guy
end,
who committed these sexual assaults that were disgusting. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't... But on Fox News, they were shedding tears.
Well, I mean, It is interesting, and I'm waiting for all the thought pieces to come out. I'm sure we'll see them this weekend. But the death of Roger Ailes, for me, a rabbit hole story, which I think really interesting for Chicago, is the story that the FOP has a new president, right, a union president, the Fraternal Order of Police, about the police. This week, Eddie Johnson, the superintendent, came out and said they're changing their excessive force policy. They've been working on this for a while, and he added something to it. And the FOP under a new leadership, Kevin Graham, I think it's Kevin Graham, they put out a statement that said, you know what? I mean, essentially this was about sanctity of life. Mm-hmm. That they said at last resort, they're changing the way excessive force, and they really wanted to prioritize the sanctity of life. And the FOP's response was, you know, we're not changing excessive force. The Department of Justice investigation to us and report is false. We don't believe it. It was political. We are not. He also mentioned that race is not an issue when it comes to Chicago police. He also mentioned that, and they mentioned in the piece about the idea that officers will do whatever it takes to protect themselves, and they don't have the sanctity of life is not a concern for them. And I don't mean that in a negative, like the idea. They didn't say that word for word, but the concept of pushback from the union, pushback from the officers. The political climate has changed. They have Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump. It's a different Department of Justice. I mean, it's a different time, but essentially this idea that, you know what, everything that's happened from Laquan McDonald to now, erase it. We are doubling down that nothing has changed. It's what we're doing is right, and the Chicago police are not going to change because of politics.
No, it's frightening, and it's kind of a false equivalency. No Chicagoan, no matter where they live, wants a police force to be in danger. Right. Because if he's in danger, he has a gun. You know, I'm definitely in danger. Right. But I think that the pushback is then let us operate the way we want to operate. And there's no such thing as brutality when there is. I mean, it's clear that the communities are not policed equally. And that needs to be dealt with. So I think no one wants a police officer to be in danger. I've got a cousin who's a police officer. Certainly do not want her to be in danger. But I think there's a long way between that point and what you saw with Laquan McDonald and some of the things, my God, and the things we saw for 20 years at Area 2 out in the South Side through John Birch. And, you know, you can police these areas, you can make them safe, you can do all those things without shooting unarmed people, without beating people to pulps in police headquarters. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, is the issue.
And you heard in the Department of Justice, and I always bring this up because I feel like sometimes it's a false equivalency, like you said. But I also feel like, you know, I want to get the story right. A lot of police officers in the Department of Justice report said, hey, they just are being they want better training for the environment they are policing now.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning what's happening now with, I mean, you even see these terrible stories of semi-automatic weapons, military style weapons with gang members. And I do believe the FOP is correct in saying they are they're emboldened with the right now. And and this idea that at a certain point, the training for police officers needs to be upgraded. They can't be showing clips from 1977. This is how you holster your gun. Like that, you know what I mean? And that's what I think police officers want, to say, if I'm trained correctly, I'm not going to make any mistake that can be politicized later.
Well, I totally agree. But if you walk in and live in these communities, they want the people who live in these communities want the gangbanger with assault weapons to be dealt with in a way. What they don't want is the case of the poor pastor from a couple of years ago. Channel 7 did a piece about this, who is coming down the street or coming down the alley, and a cop is coming her way, and they can't get around each other. And the woman ends up getting insulted and beaten by the policeman. That woman wasn't committing a crime. It's those are the kind of things that people are complaining about.
Or the John Birch stuff.
Birch stuff. And they get mushed together in ways that are wrong. They're just absolutely wrong.
I really want to get the FOP president in, mostly because I truly want to know, you know, if they truly believe it's politicized. If police officers on the beats and the streets believe that nothing has changed, and yet the politics of the country changed, meaning Obama, and they're talking specifically about Obama and the idea of speaking for the victims, not for the police officers, that has been the trouble. And then now they believe with Trump and Sessions that they have allies in Washington, and people will that the climate will change once again.
You could not put two people together who are more different than Jeff Sessions and Eric Holder.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now, and if Pence should become president, it'll be more so, because Pence is more socially conservative.
Sure is.
I think for me, the rabbit hole story, and what I love about it, and I'm fascinated by it, and I'm learning more and more about politics and police, is just this idea that the last year didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what the FOP and the police union is saying. Like, okay, everything that's happened in the last day, we've been, I mean, from headlines to the Department of Justice reports to everything that has happened since Laquan McDonald's, that video came out. No, that's not happening. We're moving on to something else.
Criminal justice reform
right
today mm-hmm. is out the window. And Jeff Sessions wants more. Sessions wants bigger penalties for people who are dealing in drugs. And then you have him, and you compare him to somebody like Toni Preckwinkle, the president of the Cook County Board. That's her
so
issue.
Interesting. Yeah.
And she's doing it. Everything is just
how
being
local
reversed.
And national are going to play with each other, right?
But you know, how many times have we seen this over the past 50 years where a thing, a law, a military device is created for the bad guy, and it ends up. Bear with me for a second. I catch Metro a lot, right? Mm-hmm. And I was getting on the Metro train, and this battle wagon rolls up, and these guys get out with uniforms on. They're going to the bathroom. So I said, I've never seen this before. What is this? And this is their
yeah, it looks like their Batmobile,
their,
right?
Yeah, well,
right.
It's like this big giant van, you know, filled with guys in camouflage. And these are Metro police. So they get this because, you know, they're going to protect us from terrorists. When it's 2002, the terrorists more than likely are not going to be on the Metro Electric line, getting on at Hyde Park and doing anything. So who is this device going to be used for? The guy who doesn't pay his Metro fare, the guy who's, you know, doing that kind of thing. So what I'm saying is that, you know, we create these things, these laws, these approaches like Jeff Sessions for that boogeyman, right? But the freedoms that it ends up eroding are not the boogeyman's freedoms necessarily. It's all of us. So I think we have to ask ourselves, how do we want to be policed in this country? Not it's a black problem, it's a South Side problem. How do we, because that thing, that method that's South, it's going to come North one day.
Yeah.
And it's going to come other directions away. And I think this is a critical time to ask that question.
Lee Bay, Carol Felsenthal, we'll take our last break. We'll come back. We'll decide which stories will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 50, 500 years from this week. What's it going to be? We'll find out here on The Download. Stay with us. Coming up tonight on The Download, Jean-Michel Jarre, considered to be the father of electronic music, French composer, held the Guinness Book World Record for largest show audience for a long time. He would do these huge amphitheater shows in Europe. And he was a composer who had figured out that the music was spectacle. And so he's the one who added the lights and the light shows to the music, and really is the father of the electronic EDM movement as we know it. He's going to be at the Auditorium Theater on Monday, and so he's joining us tonight. Also, Steve Gadlin will be here as well for the Frying Pan coming up at 10 o'clock. One of the underreported stories 847 is saying is the dropping of the rape charges of Julian Assange by the Swedish government. Very interesting, right? That was something that we heard.
Came today, though, right?
Yeah.
It's a new story.
It's new. It still makes it into the week wrap-up, right? That's right there. Right. That is an interesting one. Someone said as well, funny thing, nobody's making fun of Trump's hair anymore because there's too much else going on. And then 708 says trains and buses need protection, too. iPhones are stolen, rapes, college girl was just beat up bad, leaving UIC on a train. So, Lee, maybe we do need the
You don't need soldiers with assault rifles to do it.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So a lot more down here as well. Really just talking about a lot about Donald Trump and Russia. And then, of course, 773 says their nominated story for the year, the story we're going to remember in 100 years, will be the Turkish president and the bodyguards beating up protesters on U.S. soil in Washington, D.C. this week. That's a great story.
And facing no consequences. You know, the State Department put out a statement, but it was a really mild statement of regret that it happened.
Right. All right, let's get to it. Which story are we going to remember from this week in 5 months, a year, 5 years, 10 years, 50 years, 500 years? When we blow up this planet and we're back to being cave dwellers, what are the stories that'll be written on the cave wall from this week's news? Why don't we start with you, Lee?
It'll be five letters, Trump, right? Scratched into the wall with an underline on it. I think
this is the beginning?
I think it could be. It could be if we're here in 500 years or 50 years. But I think that what's happening this week either is noteworthy, obviously it's noteworthy on its face, or it's going to lead to a lot more noteworthy things coming up that we are going to be talking about in the next 5, 10 years.
Okay. What do you got, Carol?
I think that the reversal of the progressive policies of the Obama administration in the form of executive orders, signs it in that weird signature he has with the cameras on him, probably didn't even read the 2 pages that he's signing. But, you're talking about the EPA. You're talking about our air and our water and reversals. You're talking about criminal justice and reversals there. And the big one that really gets me is the immigration thing. We know that the people who come to our country as immigrants, my grandparents, but the people who come here as immigrants, we need them. We are lacking people. We don't have enough people to do these jobs. And Trump, his wall will not get built, but he's built a virtual wall because a number of illegal entries are dropping very, very quickly. So he's got, well, I don't know what it is, 40% fewer immigrants coming across, but it is going to be
a
negative for our country
and
not a positive. And that's going to linger no matter who's elected next time.
My story that'll be remembered will be the Sun-Times. I think that the idea they put it up this week, and I think that it looks like the Tribune is going to be the one who purchases the Sun-Times.
Unless you call Jeff Bezos and tell him.
Yeah, right.
I got to order some groceries from Amazon Prime, Amazon Fresh tonight. I'll put a little note in there. Please buy Sun-Times.
I think that that's the story that will be remembered, especially if this becomes a one newspaper town because of it from this week. Lee Bay, Carol Felsenthal, I can't thank you guys enough. It was a great night tonight. And thanks for reloading this week's news with us here on WGN.
Thank you.
All right. 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Download continues. Got 2 great segments coming up. Jean-Michel Jarre, the founder of electronic music.
Ha-ha.
1977, I think a young Rob Martyr is in his bedroom putting the headphones on, listening to maybe Oxygen, the electronic double album, Oxygen.
Eh bien sûr, mais oui.
Which is funny because I didn't know much about it, right? But this week, I was getting ready for this and I listened to the record and it is just like, it's this for 40 minutes. Wow. And I'm like, wow. Okay. Like the beat came in later.
That sounded like a didgeridoo.
Yeah. It's very didgeridoo. Yeah. It's it's ambient. Anyway, he's the father of it. And he's the one who, I think it's amazing. He's the one who put the light show to that music.
Yeah.
That's like if you go to any EDM show, you go to Tiesto or Paul Oakenfold or any of the DJs that are playing in front of 75,000 people at Soldier Field.
That's
or
amazing.
That's what they're doing, right? Now it's just light shows and neon and the whole bit.
Did he ever do like Wembley Stadium?
Yeah, I got to look it up, but he had the Guinness Book of World Record for playing some of the biggest shows. Like the stadiums are all the big ones in Europe. I can't remember, like Amsterdam, and I think he did one in Berlin, London, and then probably Paris or somewhere in France. So yeah, all right, we'll talk to him. Coming, he's going to be at the Auditorium Theater coming up on Monday. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, coming up on Monday, a true pioneer takes over the Auditorium Theater. Jean-Michel Jarre is widely considered to be the father of electronic music and EDM, not only with his sound, but with visuals. He's one of the first performers to combine light shows with the beats and is credited with taking electronic music global, as he has performed humongous shows, performing for hundreds of thousands of people in his 40-plus-year career. The French composer, performer, and producer has set records for the size of crowds and just released a new chapter to his 1977 debut album, Oxygen. It's called Oxygen 3. He's on stage bringing his brand of spectacle to the Auditorium Theater on Monday, and he joins me tonight on The Download. Jean-Michel, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. Let me ask you, I mean, how often do you get through Chicago? I would think that you've had memories in your 40-plus years of performing music, performing here in town.
Absolutely. I love Chicago. I have so many memories. One of my most recent albums, Electronica, just before Oxygen 3, I collaborated with Jeff Mills. And obviously, when I will play Chicago, I will have a special thought to also another pioneer of techno. And Chicago brought so much to electronic music, so it's an honor and privilege to be able to play Chicago on Monday.
Jean-Michel, what's it like to revisit your music? I mean, to come up with a new chapter to Oxygen, but the idea to look back at your debut album 40 years ago and almost improve upon it. What is it like for a musician to look back and also move forward like that?
Yeah, you know, it's after this big Electronica project, I've been Grammy nominated for that in this year. I mean, it was a massive production involving lots of collaborations collaborators linked to electronic music. I wanted to go back to one idea I had when I did my first album, Oxygen. This first album was done in six parts, not with tracks with proper titles, but part one, two, three, four,
right,
five, six.
Right, right.
And when I was doing this, I said, you know, it could be quite fun to do a sequel of this project later in my life. I've always been interested by sequels in literature, in movies, obviously on TV series, but it doesn't really exist in music. And it could be quite interesting, you know, like in a TV series, taking the same actors,
yeah,
that would be the same instruments, the same sounds, and putting them into a different scenario, different script. In a sense, Oxygen 3 is Oxygen Season 3.
That's great. Yeah, you don't think about that with music. You know, listening back today, I listened to the original Oxygen, and it's so interesting because there's so much texture and sound. There's a lot of layering going on with the synthesizers. It's not what we know of electronic music today. I mean, there really is. It's almost creating an electronic landscape. Talk about creating that music, because at the time, 1977, you're talking about disco music, maybe house music that's coming in, but this is a truly unique kind of electronic music.
You know, I always considered electronic music as cooking ingredients, loops, beats, textures, waveforms. And it's the same thing for DJs in front of their turntables or whatever. It's like being in front of your an oven by cooking frequencies and in very sensual, organic way. So I love this idea of that. The fact, actually, you know, whatever kind of music you do electronically today, electronic music has no boundaries anymore. It has no frontiers. And also, I've always been involved and very interested, as you said, by blending textures, architecture of sounds, and creating soundscapes, but also to try to express them on stage is what I'm going to do in Chicago, actually, on Monday. And the fact that to try to express all this architecture of sounds, these textures on a visual point of view, I this is the reason why this day I'm so happy this time to share this project with the American audience, because I created a stage design linked with a case kind of 3D without glasses.
Wow.
Where you have sliding screens with a low res LED, where you have some transparencies, and you are really it's kind of immersive feeling. It's, you know, in so many these days, you go to YouTube, you can see some shows and you say, oh yes, I get it. In that case, as something was telling me in Boston yesterday, it has to be seen to be believed. And I think it's true. It's something that would be difficult to do a movie or
right.
Blu-ray from. And it's specific to answer to your question, the idea of thinking about electronic music in terms of textures. These textures are existing on a visual, on an audio point of view, musical point of view, but also for me existing on a visual point of view in my shows, in my performances. Well, one of the first ones to involve visuals in my music. These days, almost every concert is
I was going to say, I mean, you can mention, I mean, not just with EDM music or I mean, you think about rock and roll and rap. I mean, it seems like everyone is now going with spectacle. And you were one of the fathers and the creators of the idea of putting lights and stage and really creating a visual that goes along with the music. Almost the music is a soundtrack to the experience. Where does that interest come from? Take us back to the late 70s when you were introducing this concept into music. What were you trying to accomplish by syncing up an actual stage show, visuals, the like, with the music?
Actually, two things. First of all, I was really, as a student, interested in visual arts, so I hesitated between visual arts and music. And also the fact that when I started electronic music was a new genre, right? So my source of inspirations were not in electronic music because it didn't exist. So my source of inspiration were coming from painting, abstract painters such as Jackson Pollock, for instance, and also from movies and sci-fi movies. Like,
you had a background in painting too, right?
Yes, that's right, yes. And also movies like 2001, Space Odyssey, and this kind of movies. And then the visual side of the creative process always been very important to me. And also I think that these days, I mean, you can listen to music everywhere, right? And if you go to buy a ticket to go to a concert, it's because you have somehow a visual expectation of the artist you want to you like.
Right.
And I think that also you have so many things going on. If you create a stage design, a scenography, a tour, it's with the ambition to be able to share something specific, something new with the audience that people have not heard or seen. And it's obviously with this idea in mind that I'm going to North America this time for this brand new project.
It's amazing to think about, especially EDM music as we know it now, whether it be Tiesto or Paul Oakenfold or any of the DJs that are playing. I mean, yeah, it comes with the expectation there is going to be a show, a visual show. I mean, when you're playing in front of thousands and hundreds of thousands of people, that has to be expected, especially when it's one person on stage. What do you think about the way that electronic music, EDM music, has progressed and has moved into the idea of playing in front of these crowds of hundreds of thousands of people? Here in Chicago, we play, like you're playing at the Auditorium Theater, but the Soldier Field in the summertime. Where do you think electronic music is going, and will we see more audiences flock to this kind of show?
You know, when I started, I always been convinced that electronic music was linked with space, with environment. Actually, oxygen was also a kind of ecological message. And I think that electronic music is linked with open air, with outdoor, and with this kind of idea of community event. And I played, actually, as you said, in front of me million people. I mean, three times in the Guinness Book of Records for having
crazy,
played even
yeah.
in front of 2 or even 3 million people. But I mean, it's not a matter of breaking records. It's just a matter of, actually, as you said, they need to be able to break the barriers, to break the boundaries, and to be able to share your work with lots of people. But also, you know, which is interesting is actually this show is one contribution to this. The fact that I conceived this project as a modular concept. I mean by this that 3 weeks ago I was in the desert by the Dead Sea in Israel, in the middle of the desert with a big, big production, the same production that I'm going to play in Chicago. I played also big arenas like the O2 in London. I played in theater. I played in small club, the same production, just by expanding it or shrinking it. And I think that it's quite cool to be able to to experiment different locations with kind of project. But I think, you know, which matters, you have so many things going on in the world these days. I mean, which is important is not just adding lasers and adding lights. And I've done all this with, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, I mean, and it was fun. But now I think that it's not enough. What matters is, what do you want to say? What do you want to share with the audience? What kind of graphic content you are going to share with the audience? What kind of music you are going to share? What kind of frequencies? What kind of bass, sub-bass? And all that has to be orchestrated like in a movie. We are much more difficult now and much more picky and choosy than even 10 or 15 years ago, when you see the complexity of TV series these days, the scenario, the scripts. It has evolved. It's the same thing in for EDM shows or for shows. The fact that if electronic music, like everything else, is not constantly renewing itself, it's going to fade out. We need to bring new ideas, fresh ideas, new experiences. And I hope that this project is contributing to this.
French composer, performer, producer, musician Jean-Michel Jarre is widely considered to be the father of electronic music, EDM. He is going to be at the Auditorium Theater this Monday. It's a pleasure to talk with you, Jean-Michel. Thank you so much for taking some time out to talk to us about electronic music, your 40-plus year career, and the future of EDM. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, and I'm really looking forward to play Chicago on Monday and sharing this great experience with you all, guys.
When the sun begins to sing, behind the smoke, there's a bunny.
Here's the stuff I'm talking about right here. She's got that vibe to it. I always like to, it's funny because we get a chance to talk to a lot of different people on the show, which is great. And getting the chance to talk to, I don't know, I'll be the first to say, I don't know that much. It's not like I was a fan of Jean-Michel Jarre. But just seeing that he's coming through to play such it's huge to play the Auditorium Theater. Mm-hmm. We had the conversation saying that the Auditorium was here at the World's Fair. Forgot who we talked to on the show about the idea that theater either was built for the World's Fair in 1893, could be wrong on the date, 1903? I can't remember when the one.
Which one?
Yeah. Either it was built for it or it was here, and that's what attracted the fair. I can't remember. It's one or the other. But, to have him coming through town and get a chance to read up on his life and who he is and all that kind of stuff, it's pretty great to, get a better understanding of really where the roots of that music is. And there's some people, text in this guy's in, this is the reason. But say what you will, but, there's obviously a global interest in electronic music.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I'm looking up right now, but he had held the Guinness Book of World Records for shows, for sizes of shows in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking 2015, he was at Coachella. Mm-hmm. You know, this was the 80s in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that, where he's playing to 300,000 people. Playing that music.
Yeah.
So, you incredible. Say, I can't believe that music's terrible. I'm I might agree with you in the sense that there's some great stuff to it and there's some other stuff that's not. But you cannot deny that it has appeal, commercial appeal, appeal.
I mean, I was listening to it quite a bit, and it's not something that I would, put on maybe to, play in my car or something. Right. But if I was doing something around the house, perhaps, as background music, it's quite pleasant.
It is. It actually is much more pleasant than some of the more contemporary versions of EDM,
where you just have this driving the comes down. Like,
that is the perfect impression of EDM.
that was it right there. They got a list of large concerts. July 14th, 1979, celebrating Bastille Day at the Place de Concorde. 1 million people.
Wow.
How about that, huh? April 5th, 1986, 1.5 million people. Celebration of the 150th anniversary of Texas. Yeah. In Houston.
Jeez.
So there you go. Steve Gadlin, up next.
We will give you a beautiful 7 3/4 inch fry pan free of charge.
Thanks, Rob. All right. 720 WGN. It is time to put Shark Tank Steve Gadlin into the frying pan. Yeah. Gadlin is the brain behind the successful local business, IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. He presented his business idea on the television program Shark Tank, and he snagged Mark Cuban as a principal investor. So now Steve has to go back to Mark Cuban with new ideas. Before he goes into that pressure cooker, he comes to WGN Radio to jump into the frying pan. Yeah. He's giving us his exclusive business idea so we can poke holes in it and give Steve the confidence he needs to pitch it to Mark Cuban himself. Steve Gadlin, welcome back to the frying pan, my friend.
Thank you, sir. How are you, Justin?
I'm good. I'm glad to have you on the show. You know, it's hard to not see you every week.
It is hard.
You know, I mean,
it would be hard for me too. Yeah, yeah. I can imagine.
But like we said at the beginning of the news, we actually think this is good because this gives you a little bit more time between frying pans to come up with ideas.
You know, but that's the funny thing is what ends up happening is I'll think of an idea 3 minutes before I call in or show up. No, not this time though. I'm just playing with you. I've got a real solid one for you tonight.
All right. Well, let's get to it. Steve Gadlin, you know how this works. Everybody at home, 312-981-7200. Get ready to hear Steve Gadlin's frying pan idea tonight. What do you got, Steve?
So this one came to me the other day, and I thought, as it came to me, I thought, my gosh, how has no one else thought of this yet? How is this not already a product in all of our supermarkets? Now, you know, I'm a bit of a foodie, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I've thought of a couple of inventions that had to do with food. A while ago, I had pitched to you the Cobby, which was a synthetic cob that you could put any food on. So you could have any food on the cob. It didn't go over too well because of the toxic glue we had to use to fix the food product. But I've got another one. I think this is a great one. Everyone loves the tactile experience of enjoying a banana. Am I right?
Yeah, sure.
You know, there's the peeling and the soft yellow skin. But sometimes what you eat inside, the texture and that flavor just leaves you wanting. Not the way a good steak does, obviously. So what I've invented is a food product called the Beef Nana. Now, the Beef Nana is very similar to a banana on the outside. But as you peel into it, instead of the bland, mushy banana fruit inside, you get a nice, well-cooked, beefy steak.
Okay, so the Beef Nana.
Yes. So it's a banana shell, so you still get to go through the enjoyable part of a banana, the peeling of that skin. But what's inside is a nice, steaming, warm piece of steak that you can take a nice bite into. And, you know, really sort of satisfies all of the tactile experiences one looks for in a meal.
Well, it's definitely something new and unique. There's no doubt about it. I have right off the bat a couple of pretty basic questions, but I'll leave that to our listeners. 312-981-7200. What do we think, Download Nation? What do we think of Beef Nana? It's Steve Gadlin's latest.
Another use for it, if you don't mind me throwing in, is, you know, a lot of places don't let you bring food. You know, you go to a stadium to watch a sports game or a concert, and you're not allowed to bring your own food in. But oftentimes you can get by with slipping a banana through, saying, oh, it's just a little snack. Now, what they don't know is there's a nice steamy steak inside that thick yellow skin. So, you know, again, it's a way to save money by bringing your own food into a venue that might not let you bring in a steak. You don't need a fork and knife to eat this steak either. So tons of benefits. I'm sure we'll get into all of them.
Yeah, because I automatically have just questions really about nature, number one. And number two, you know, the thing I'm thinking about is just how it stays. Anyway, well, I want the listeners to take the lead on this. I am just the moderator for this. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Yay or nay on the beef Nana.
That is, Justin.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just got a text from my legal team. Let's call this the meat Nana.
Okay.
Not allowed to call it the beef Nana. I retract that. This is the meat Nana.
The meat Nana. All right. Well, I got questions about that too, but again, we'll figure that out tonight. 312-981-7200. What do we think of the meat Nana? All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we will listen to your texts and also your phone calls here on The Download. Stay with us.
We will give you a beautiful 7 3/4 inch fry pan free of charge.
It's a frying pan. May's edition. Steve Gadlin, the creator of IWantToDrawACatForYou.com, who won on Shark Tank. Got a development deal with Mark Cuban. He gets to go back and give Mark Cuban new ideas before he brings Cuban the idea. He workshops them here on The Download, the segment The Frying Pan, once a month here on 720 WGN. Tonight's idea, Steve Gadlin, the meat Nana. Explain.
Correct. Yeah, so the meat Nana, at face value, it looks just like a banana. So you'd carry it around with the convenience factor of any banana. And what it does, though, is it fills you up a little better than a banana, because when you peel into that thick yellow hide, waiting inside is a steak food. It's delicious, has the texture of a nice beefy steak that you can dig into. It's far more filling than a banana. You know, it comes at you steamy and warm, and it's just a real delicious meal replacement. So the meat Nana, it's, again, the convenience and the ease of use. Everyone knows how to use a banana. You don't need a fork and knife for this hearty meal. That's our slogan.
Hmm. Okay. 312-981-7200. Let's go to the line. Let's go to Keith. Keith, what do we like? Do yay or nay on a meat Nana?
It sounds interesting. I just have a few questions about, I guess, it being prepared. At first, I thought it was like a beef jerky, and then you said it was kind of like a yummy steak or a heated steak, whatever. So do you cook it, or does it come pre-cooked? Or do you cook it with that skin on it?
Right.
Like, how does it actually work?
Yeah, how does it work? Thanks a lot, Keith.
Well, let me just say before I divulge too much info that everything I'm about to say is patent pending, as we see in the business. So it comes to you uncooked. There is raw meat inside the yellow skin, but as you peel it down, it releases a patent pending substance that fast cooks the beef, similar to the way a grill would. So it's, you know, again, you're not eating jerky. And you're not eating raw meat. You're eating freshly cooked, steamy, warm beef food that's just delicious. I'm sorry, meat food that's just delicious.
Okay, so there's no flame involved.
No flame. Think of how your digestive system works. Did you know that when you eat food, the enzymes in your stomach basically re-cook it for you?
No, but okay.
So what we do is we use some of those same enzymes to help fast cook the meat food, the beef food, the meat Nana filler, and turn it into a delicious, steamy, warm steak for you.
Okay. Yeah, you said that. All right. 312-981-7200. Let's go. Okay. I'm trying to find it. How does it stay warm on the go? That's what 331 wants to know. Which,
yeah,
I think,
and again, that's the great thing is it's not warm until you actually start peeling into that thing. Now, it doesn't peel at the same speed as a normal banana. This is an actual banana hide. This is a thick, synthetic, slow-peeling banana hide. So that gives it time to heat up and warm up. And it just takes a few minutes to peel through it. Mm-hmm. And also, unlike a banana where you might peel the whole thing at once, this you're peeling just enough for you to bite off. So again, it's warm as you peel it, because of the enzyme that gets released into the meat food. It's just delicious. It's like going to a restaurant and ordering a delicious steak, medium rare.
Right. Well, that's a question 847 had. Can I leave these on the counter? They have to be refrigerated. Can I get a meat nana very rare?
Yeah, that's great. So you can leave them on the counter. I recommend refrigerating. But you know what? Because of the patent-pending combination of foods that make up our meat food, you don't have to refrigerate. Similar to butter, some people prefer to leave it out on the counter. Same concept. Now, if you want it rare, I'll have to apologize. Because of the enzymes we use, you know, we have these calculated toward a medium rare experience. You know, it's as if you've gone into a restaurant, you placed an order for a nice medium rare steak, mm-hmm. and then they put it in front of you. There it is, steamy and warm. But I tell you, you don't need a fork and knife for this hearty meal.
I'm enjoying how you're ending every sentence with the tagline. That's good. That's a strong, consistent.
Oh, am I?
I'm picking it up. I don't know if the audience at home is. I do have a very sophisticated ear, but yes.
Yep, just trying to keep things conversational.
Got it. Okay, well, let's go to Val. Val, what do you think, yay or nay on meat nana?
Well, the jury's still out. I have a two-pronged question. Mm-hmm. How, if I go to the grocery store or wherever it's sold, how is it packaged? Is it already in the peel?
Good question.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I don't know what section they'll put them in. For certain reasons, they have to keep it out of the fruit aisle, and for other reasons, they need to keep it out of the meats aisle. But what I'll tell you is they are in that peel. We'll probably shrink wrap five or six in a bunch, maybe even attach them together so they look like a bunch of bananas just for funsies. But, you know, they're already in the peel. You don't need to inject the meat food into the peel. We've done that for you in our factory.
All right, Val, one more question.
Okay, my other question then is that I like to look at my meat for the certain type of marbling.
Right.
How would I do that if it's already in the peel?
Well, I'll tell you, because of the material.
Great question. Thanks, Val.
Yeah, our meat food has a perfect consistency. It'll be the same experience every time because the mold and the materials we use to craft it. So once you've had one meat nana, you can expect the exact same experience every time. Now, that experience I'm talking to is so similar to going to a nice fancy restaurant and ordering a nice steamy steak and having it medium rare delivered straight to your table.
Okay. Right. All right, let's keep going on the line here. Let's go to Eric. Eric, yay or nay on the meat nana?
Hey, well, my problem with the meat nana is I already thought of this. My idea.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure I thought of this one first.
Were you alive back in 1979 like me?
Yeah, I was actually born in 1976, and I have two years old when I first started talking. I was a very early talker, but again, you know, a lot of this is patent pending.
Right, buddy. Well, I got the patent for this. It's patent 111-19. And
that's funny because ours is 11118. So that they must have just issued it right before yours.
I'm gonna knock you around a little bit.
All right, it's getting a little personal there, Eric.
We're making jokes.
You guys are making jokes, but
yeah.
All right, 312-981-7200. There are a ton of questions, Steve. And I'm very, very happy that Download Nation is taking stock in this one because they seem
great.
There's always going to be a consistent number of texts that say, no, absolutely not. This is disgusting. Steve's terrible. We get that that's normal. But I'm very happy to see that there are several that are very interested in knowing more of the details of this product. And we're going to get into the nitty gritty, the meat.
Sounds like your audience is engaging.
That's right. Coming up here after Rob Martyr's news, 312-981-7200. Steve Gadlin on the line with Meat Nana, his idea for this week's frying pan. Stay with us.
We will give you a beautiful 7 3/4 inch fry pan free of charge.
It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's Friday night, May 19th, 2017. And it is time for our monthly installment of The Frying Pan, our segment with Steve Gadlin, the inventor, entrepreneur, innovator, who had one on Shark Tank with his business idea, iwantodrawacatforyou.com, And, of course, got a development deal with Mark Cuban. And now, before he brings new ideas to Cuban, he brings them here to the download to workshop them to get a better idea of if they work. Tonight's idea, the Meat Nana. 312-981-7200. Steve Gatlin, give us the elevator pitch on the Meat Nana.
Yeah, the Meat Nana is just like a banana. It has all of the conveniences of everyone's favorite fruit, but none of the flavor disappointment, because when you tear into a Meat Nana, you see a nice meat-like steak-type food that's just steamy and warm. Thanks to enzymes, we pack right into the hide there, and it's as if you're at a restaurant, a fine dining establishment, and someone has brought a nice steak to your table. But I tell you, you won't need a fork and knife for this hearty meal.
Right, right. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Gary. Gary, yay or nay on the Meat Nana?
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening, radio. Good evening there, Steve. Hi.
Hi.
I want to question, do you really think this is going to be acceptable brought into any kind of a stadium, especially a basketball stadium with vendors that have food vending, etc.? And why not just coat it with some corn dog mix and have it called the corn steak dog? We've already got that. This is ludicrous. Thank you. Goodbye.
All right. Thanks, Gary. Thanks for being so concise.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, we've done tests with this, actually. We've been able to, not with the Meat Nana, of course, but with actual bananas, and we've been able to take bananas into probably about 98% of stadiums around the country without any guff from security. So that's been pretty simple. Yeah, definitely easy to bring in. And, you know, this is not a corndog experience. I think a lot of foodies, especially, people really enjoy the tactile experience of slowly peeling back that banana hide. Again, it's just the flavor and the texture of the actual banana fruit that leaves you wanting. So this is not for your corndog customer, and this is no hot dog in there. This is a, you know, this is like a fine dining establishment steak-type food. Yeah, with you know, it's delicious, steamy, warm, as if it was just brought to your table.
Right. 331 says,
need an extra fork, waiter. All right, need a fork or knife for this hearty meal.
Right. Is this enzyme formula safe for human consumption?
That's a great question. Well, of course, it's safe to eat. You know, again, this is a food type. It's a food item. So it's so safe to eat. In fact, you've got all of these enzymes in your body already. I'll tell you that much. I won't tell you the formula, but I will bring up a fact that I brought up earlier, that the enzymes in your stomach actually recook your food as it's digested, a type of cooking called, you know, similar to what you do with ceviche when you put this lime juice on it. But this is different. This is it's a bile, combination of bile and other natural human body enzymes. Only because that would be cannibalism, we take these enzymes from animals.
331 wants to know, why can't it be in the meat aisle?
Oh, well, again, this is a meat food. We can't call it the Beef Nana I mentioned. We call it the Meat Nana. It's a steak-like food, but it doesn't meet the exacting standards, really the draconian standards of the FDA to call it a meat.
Well, that 630 says, what's the difference between meat, food, and meat food?
Yeah, well, meat is a type of food, and meat food is a hyphenated way of saying a food that is very meat-like in its appearance and texture.
Mm.
You know, it's delicious, though. I don't know if you've ever been, Justin, to a fine dining establishment and ordered a fresh steak right off the menu, but the experience is similar.
Okay, let's go
with
to...
With one exception.
Okay, well,
you won't need a fork and knife for this sort of meal.
All right, here we go. Justin, you got the same kind of question I have, right? Just about what kind of food it is.
Yeah. Sorry?
The description of steak-type food item, it gives you a cringing feeling. It's not specific. It doesn't tell you what it is.
Well, we don't say that on the label, I'll tell you that much. Again, this is a pitch to the investors. We want to make sure the investors know that we're not putting a $40 porterhouse steak in if you're one of our meat nanas. Otherwise, how are you going to make any money on it, right? We've taken certain shortcuts that will make investors very happy, and we've masked those shortcuts using the newest science so that the users of the meat nana will feel like they're at a restaurant and they just ordered a nice, fine, juicy steak,
and you don't need a knife and fork.
That's right.
Yeah, that's a good question. Glenn, what do you think? Yay or nay on the meat nana?
Nay. I think if he had changed the casing from like maybe like a banana peeling to, let's say, something more natural, like intestine, yeah, I think he might have a hit there.
Like a tamale, you know, kind of thing, right?
Like a hot dog.
Well, Kishki and hot dog already exist. This is the meat nana, because what I know about foodies is they love that tactile experience of peeling back that thick yellow banana hide.
I don't want a nice
juicy steak in their mouth.
I don't want that much. I don't, just, you know, this could go all wrong.
Well,
you know?
This caller is probably not a foodie.
Oh, I'm a foodie, all right.
I mean, again, we're targeting this toward sophisticated foodies who enjoy that wonderful tactile experience of peeling back that thick yellow banana hide and putting that nice, delicious, steamy steak right in their mouth.
Yeah, this is getting really X-rated pretty soon.
All right. Okay, Glenn. No, that's obviously not where we're going. Thanks for the call there, Glenn. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. There are a lot of questions here, around the idea of the meat and really trying to get an understanding. Maybe from, like you said, like maybe actually from a investor's point of view. 630 says, I'd use the term proprietary meat blend. It sounds fancy.
Well, again, for reasons I don't want to go into, that won't apply.
Well, 847 says, you keep calling it meat-like or meat food. Just exactly what is the meat made of and how is it manufactured?
Well, again, patent pending. So a lot of this is top secret proprietary information, but I'll say there is some soy product. There's some beef product. There's some filler product. There's a whole bunch of stuff in there. But, you know, the ingredients aren't important to me. I think what the consumer enjoys is that experience. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, the experience is this.
Right. We got it. Sebastian's on the line. Sebastian, yay or nay on the meat nana?
I definitely say yay.
Yay, all right.
I think it's an awesome idea.
Okay.
Thanks.
But I was wondering if you've considered using like different levels of enzymes so that you could have it like a rare or like a medium or even a well done.
Great question,
Sebastian.
Yeah,
that's something I thought of. Yeah, that's an idea I had earlier. We actually thought of that, where we'll put different stickers on the meat nanas based on that enzyme for the different types of cooking. So, yeah, that's something we thought of. We've got that under control, okay. And that's one of our ideas. Yeah.
773 wants to know, how about a steak sauce-flavored peel? Then you wouldn't even need to peel it at that point.
Yeah, unfortunately, the materials we use to simulate that thick, yellow, wonderful tactile banana hide, they are not edible materials. So we wouldn't recommend putting that part in your mouth or near your mouth, to be honest.
Okay.
In fact, after you've eaten a meat nana, we do recommend you wash your hands. Because if you get any of that material from the thick, yellow, synthetic banana hide in your eyes, it's just going to be messy.
Is there any, 331 wants to know, is there any nutritional value in this this meat nana?
Well, one of the most important things of nutrition is taste. And boy, does this taste delicious. It's real similar taste to a nice, steamy, delicious steak.
312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We'll come back. I'll read some of the more saucy texts, the ones that really sort of take this segment to and really test your mettle as an inventor, but also as somebody.
Sure.
You know, how you respond to constructive criticism. 312-981-7200. We'll come back. We'll talk more about the meat nana. It's Frying Pan. Stay with us.
We will give you a beautiful 7 3/4 inch fry pan free of charge.
All right. Wrapping up the frying pan tonight.
The idea on the table from Steve Gadlin is the meat nana. Go ahead, Steve. Explain the meat nana one last time.
Yeah, it's like a banana, but it's filled with meat. And it's convenient like a banana, but delicious like a hot, steamy steak delivered to you right at a fancy restaurant.
331 says, wouldn't it melt your hand? Is it safe to hold?
Well, the outer husk of the synthetic banana leather is definitely safe to hold, but you don't want to touch the inner half as you peel it back. If any of that enzyme gets on your hand, well, let's just say you're cooked.
Okay. All right. Let me go to the lines. Let's go to Dave. Dave, yay or nay on meat nana?
I got to say nay on the meat nana.
Okay. Why do you say nay?
Well, I originally saw this idea at the Sands Hotel in Las Vegas in the 80s. The comedian's name was Gallagher. He pulled a banana out of his pocket at one part of his stand-up before he got to Sledge-O-Matic and busting watermelons, if you remember that.
Of course. You're probably
too young to remember that. Those of us over 60 remember it.
That's his Showtime specials all the time.
Oh, okay. Well, remember he would pull a banana out of his pocket and he'd peel back the banana and inside was meat.
I never watched those shows, so it must be a coincidence that we thought of the same idea independently.
All right. Well, apparently Gallagher didn't patent it, so there you go.
There you go.
That's right. Patent pending.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Gallagher is all I have to say. I don't know who he's talking about.
All right. Let's go to John. John, yay or nay on meat nana?
Hey, did you say John?
Yeah, John.
It's got to be a nay. I mean, it doesn't sound very appealing, appetizing. And
that's great. Appealing. I mean, very good fun.
I put it in the same category as a few shows back as to the guy who had the ketchup flavored ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you get some of that and put it on it?
Well, yeah, that's the same guy. This is Steve, the same guy.
Oh, well, no wonder.
Yeah, there he goes. See, at least he's consistent.
No wonder.
There you go.
Okay, well, did I do a ketchup flavored ice cream?
You did, yeah.
Oh,
no. It was good.
Okay,
yeah.
Terrible. Well, thanks. Good luck with your banana.
Terrible.
All right, thanks, John.
Thank you, sir.
Terrible. You loved it. You pitched it hard. It was the idea you could, you get the ketchup in there and the ice cream and then kids are eating well, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. It is good for kids. I do like that idea again.
All right, let's go to Kathy. Kathy, yay or nay on meat nana?
Yeah, hi. Back to the concept that your previous caller had with the marbling and being able to view it. I, too, like to see how much fat content is in the meat that my family consumes. How about, since he said that the peel is actually a synthetic, how about putting a little window in that synthetic peel, similar to how a pack of bacon has a tiny little flip top
window. Yeah, right. Like the bacon.
You can view how much fat content.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I'll tell you why. One, there's a label, and it'll tell you how much fat content. But two, and I hate to be frank with you, the way that if you watch some of those fancy feast commercials, the way that food looks in the bowl versus the way it looks when you open the can, great disparity, okay? We don't want to put a window on the thing. Trust me, you don't want to see this till the enzymes have done their job, okay?
Oh, okay, so it doesn't look good. I see.
Well, no.
Hey, yeah, I don't usually eat my meat sight unseen.
But again, let's not call it meat. Let's not call it meat. I don't want to mislead anyone. This is a meat-flavored food product. That is just delicious. And I tell you, the experience is practically the same as if you're at a high-end restaurant and you ordered a delicious, juicy steak. So, putting a window on it's not going to do it. It's not going to move product, if you get my drift.
All right. Well, thanks, Kathy.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Let me go to some of these texts. 312-981-7200. 414 says, why not call it the banana eek? Kind of like headache, like Steve ache.
I'm not following.
They're saying you're a headache. I think that's what they're going for. They just need to work that out. 773 says, is it a non-slip peel, and can I heat it up via Bluetooth?
That's funny that they asked that, actually. We do have Bluetooth compatibility built right into the husk.
so that as you're peeling it back, you can get real-time alerts to your phone to let you know when it's safe to eat.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. But that's a feature everybody loves, especially right. millennials these days. Everything's got to have Bluetooth compatibility.
Right, right. Let's go to Glenn. Glenn, yay or nay on the meat nana?
Yes, I have a question. I heard you first say that you recommend peeling it down just far enough so you can get the first bite.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, and then later you said you would not recommend getting the peeling anywhere near your mouth. How does that work?
I'll be honest that we haven't sorted out all of the important details. But there is actually...
You did say that, though, right?
I said both of those things, yeah. And I know it sounds contradictory, but one thing we might consider doing is shipping product with a special mouth guard that goes around the mouth to make sure that the peel pushes down and stays away from your skin. Because, again, we don't want to accidentally cook the consumer by putting them in contact with these enzymes that are quick cooking the meat.
That's terrible. I'm a definite no.
Well,
wait till you see it. Wait till you try one.
No, I'm not going to try one. Trust
but
me.
Have you ever been to a fine dining establishment and ordered a nice steamy steak? Because
Absolutely.
The experience is similar. It's really similar.
I've
but
heard you say that 10 times already.
You're not going to need a fork and knife for this hearty meal.
Oh, really? Again?
How do you feel?
No. No, I'm definite no.
All right. All right.
I'm
Thanks,
hearing
Glenn.
A maybe. I'm hearing a maybe, and I think I've got a future customer on the phone.
Well, I don't know, Glenn. Yeah. I think that silence tells you that Glenn is done with that exchange. All right, real quick. 815 says, I've yet to hear an idea from Steve that would actually impress Mark Cuban, let alone make any money. 847 says, Bellevue's still open, you know. I think that's a
Sorry, what
mental
is?
Hospital, Bellevue.
Ah,
847, I sure would like to have whatever he's smoking. 224 says, na, 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 na. Hey, hey,
like
hey.
Banana. That's great.
Don't buy. That's what it says.
Oh, interesting.
262 says, does this product come with a warming holster that you wear like a gun holster? Then you can put your banana into your banana hammock for your house or car that'll keep the product warm.
No, it's the actual enzymes do the heating.
815, beef nana, that's what we called grandma when she was pumped up on steroids.
Well, meat nana.
Right. I think it should be called me nana. Sung to the name game. Me na 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 anna banna bo banna na 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 na.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that was
very clever callers.
Yeah, they got some good stuff tonight. Mm-hmm. Another huge success, says 630. 773 says, look out, Gibson's. 773
says, yeah, you know,
that's
another thing. That's something we do have to worry about is steakhouses retaliating or creating copycat products.
Right, right. Well, 773 says, stealing bits from Gallagher. You've jumped the charts, Steve.
I'll say I don't know that I've stolen anything from Gallagher here. Right. That, you know, this came fresh to mind.
I eat in my car a lot.
Yeah,
that sounds like a good post-gym treat.
Oh, you know what? It's great. And if you pair it with our corn milk sports drink that we pitched a few months ago, the delicious milk with the plumpy corn kernels floating in it.
Right. Well, I think the meat nana still has some work it's got to be done on. But I think you did good this time around, and I think you did good at least with your branding in the way that you continued to say the same thing over and over and over and stayed on message.
Well, you know, that's I'm listening strong. To a lot of politicians lately and realizing that's how you sell a concept
that
to
is.
The American public. You really got to pick your slogan and repeat it ad nauseum until people treat it as fact.
Steve Gadlin, the frying pan, joins us every month here on The Download. Steve, thanks so much for giving us meat nana tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciated it. I hope this was a hearty meal of information, and you don't need a fork and knife for that hearty meal.
All right, yeah.